The best damn league show, period, is brought to you by eSportsBet, the industry's leading crypto odds matrix. If you have yet to deposit onto their site, you can, using our referral link in the description box below, get a 50% deposit bonus on up to $200. Now, they cover League of Legends, Rainbow Six, Valorant, CSGO, Dota 2, FIFA, all the games you could imagine. So if you're someone who's yet to make any bets in esports, if someone who wants to try it out for free, they have the DJT, they have the World's Prediction Series 2 contest. If you're someone who wants to switch up where you make your bets, how about esports bet? Right, this is going to be another episode of the Best Damn League Show, period. As you can see, we've got a guest for this one. We've got Zabatine, who people might know. He coached for teams like Optic. What was the other one? What was the other NA team?
Immortals. I mean, Immortals. I just did Optic Immortals, and then I worked, I would say, undercover for other teams in EU, yes. Like LDLC. But it wasn't official. I was not the head coach back then, so yes, I mostly did Optic and Immortals.
Yes, obviously what I've done there is I'm such a huge fan of Xmithian, so I've actually memory hauled that team ever existed. You know, that's what I've done as a favour for you, to have a team. You know? And obviously I wasn't even going to bring it up, but since you bring it up,
we would have to clear the air here because, you know, people that follow my stream...
Most hated team of all time, pretty much, right?
One of my most hated teams of all time. And for people that know my stream, I was actually really, really critical back
in
the day.
It was the classic lineup, exactly. Yes,
yeah, right. I know. That's something that we need to get rid of the way, you know. It's like, I feel like it got so unjustified. I mean, maybe we'll have the chance to speak about it later on, but
if you want to address give us a count now. It doesn't have to be a 10-minute segment. Just give us your thoughts now. What do you think was unfair?
I mean, okay, let's just start it with this. How about I just give, so the take that I had that people got up in arms with was that I thought that Aiko was nowhere close to the level of what an import should be in LCS, and the reason that he was in the team was because Zabutine was French, and so as was French as well. So I thought that there was this French bias because of the fact that he came from LFL, and he just wasn't at the level of what you'd expect of, like, you know, the Jens and the Bjergsen. I mean, one of the things that we always said on the Crackdown was that should be a spot for somebody who's considered one of the best players in the entire world. Like, if somebody like Faker or Chovy came to your team, they would be occupying the same spot within your team as somebody like Aika. So that's what I was really hard on Aika and Ryoma, and I was just saying that the reason that Aika was in the team was because he was French.
Yeah, which I think was kind of wrong because, you know, I was just following ERLs, and I was actually on the market on different rookies, and it happened that, and some NA players at the same time, and it happens that Aika was the first one to actually agree to work. And you know how it works in off seasons, right? It's like you inquire many players, right, that you think the profile is going to be good for your team, and you need to sell down the slots because you don't know. Like, they tell you, like, oh, you know, I'll call back tomorrow, and then you call them back tomorrow and they're already taken by another team, and then the player that you put on hold found another team as well. So you have a very, very high first come, first serve, right? And it's not like I just took Aika because he was first serve, right? But it's like the players from NA that I was in reach with made me wait, right? And the clock was ticking, and I knew, like, we already had kind of an idea of what we wanted to do. And I have to say, right, with Aika's playstyle, you see that when he came back to LFL, he actually played terrible, right? The first play, he really didn't play well. And I think that's a thing about Aika, and I was wrong on that, and I own it, right? Like, that's the part. This is my fault that he didn't play well, because he's a player that actually helps the team play well if he has very high carries, like very strong carries to play around, right? For instance, in LDLC this year, you see he's playing against... Exactly. And he was playing around comp the year before, right? He had Hirit and comp, which obviously he played very well in their respective team in LEC this year. I mean, Hirit didn't play well the I would say this
last year he was good, so whatever, keep going, the point stands.
He's a very good laner. So I feel like it's just the idea of Aika was great. It's just the execution of Aika was not good, because I put him in a team where Soaz wants to play for the team, Xmithian wants to play for the team. That's my mistake, because when I built the team, I was like, okay, so I'm gonna just build a team out of players that are very intelligent about the game and want just to play, like, more around, like, the fundamentals, the rules of macro and stuff like that. But, you know, I realized during the process by actually screaming and stuff like that you need one very, like, young, rough diamond that actually just, you know, clicks insanely well, and like these smart players can actually enable. And that was my, like, I own it, because, you know, it's like there is nothing worse than people that actually don't own their mistakes. But I feel like giving this back on Aker and saying he's not good, I don't think it wasn't good. Yes, probably was not like the best import that NA ever existed. But if you look at his track record after Immortals, whenever you got a team that actually fits his profile, he's shining. And right now he's probably the best ERL player with Ragnar and Yike. Like the top three, the top side of the map for IGLC is probably the best ERL top side. And probably better than most of your top side from LEC. So I just thought it was all justified, because I don't think it has to do anything to do. It would have been like, I don't know, from Serbia, Croatia, Hungary, whatsoever, I would have picked him the same way. Like, I was discussing with a lot of rookies from EU, and has nothing to do with the fact that he's French.
Okay.
Do you have any closing comment on that, Dom, before we move on?
No, I mean, because I had that take when the team was formed, that I just thought that it was...
You did,
like...
actually. I will say, when that lineup was announced before it played, Dom did actually say he thought, like, the Smithy Swords part, like, didn't work, and, like, essentially there were too many supportive elements. Yeah, that's
true. I just thought that, like, so when I thought about Soaz, that was after recently came off the Misfits year, I believe, which is, like, pretty bad. But before that, when he was playing with Fnatic, the last, like, split that he actually had a good year, he was just, like, a tank player, essentially. Like, he wasn't playing the carries anymore. Bwipo would come in, play the carries, he would play the tanks. And then Xmithy was just, like, the facilitator jungler for Team Liquid before that. He was just, that was his famous role on the team. So when I saw the team, I'm like, why would they assemble a team like this? And the only thing that I could come to logically was, like, maybe it has to do with the fact that, I believe, you were casting LFL at a point, or you were casting the French League at a point.
I've never casted the French League because it was not really popular back
you
when
do
I was
the French
caster.
Broadcast of LEC.
But I did. Yeah, I've been a caster for 9 years. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was France. More just the regional broadcast of the other.
I was doing LEC and LCS. I was doing LEC, LCS, LCK mostly, and Worlds.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, when I looked at the team, I was like, what do these players have in common? It's like, oh well, you have these players that theoretically shouldn't work on the team, and they're all French. So like, it's like, it's not something where I was saying that this is 100% like the point. It's like, I'm just like, what else could there be? You know,
it's
like,
speculation. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, sure. It wasn't like speculation or necessarily like pure damnation. My main thought was not even that. My main thought was that I just thought Aiko was not good. I was like, this guy is taking a spot from players like a Blaze Olive, Palafox at that time, which I had seen, and now you see they're performing actually kind of decently in LCS. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what does this Aika guy bring that our talent doesn't? And this was in the years where almost no NA talent was getting shots. Like season 10, mm-hmm. It was just like no NA mid laner were getting shots. They were getting Aika and Ryoma, and I always paired them together because I'm like, these are two players, and at that time Ryoma occupied an import slot. He was from OC, that was before the merge, or whatever, before they were counted as NA players. And I was like, why do we keep on importing players from regions that are not better than our players that are already here just because they're imports? Like, it makes no sense to me. So, I mean, my main criticism of Aiko was that I just didn't think he was at the level of an import. When I look at what the other imports were in the league, just look nothing close to what I expected. So,
you know,
and then I think he also was just having like a bad time, because I watch some LFL now, and he looks like a completely different player. He looks way more confident, way more like poised throughout the game. It felt like he was probably pretty nervous to be playing with an LCS and have that pressure of being an import on the team, and obviously the team wasn't doing well, so maybe that had some effect on why he's playing so poorly. Because I will say, watching LFL now, I mean, he looks pretty good, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I feel, you know, it's not like it's at the end of the day, you know, it is what it is. Just it stuck to me, like, you know, sometimes analysts, like public analysts like you, they say things resonates, because a lot of people can't, like, I would say, formulate a proper opinion on the industry, because either they have no info, either they have no analysis of the game. And so it's just going to be, oh, you know, so I had the nepotism thing like for probably a year and a half, even after like my firing of Immortals. It's like, oh, yeah, you just like nepotism and stuff. I was like, It feels bad, because I feel like I've chose Soaz. It was legitimately like an import slot top laner, even though like he didn't have like that great of a record. I understand where you come from for Aika, but I felt like it had such an echo that shouldn't have. But I mean, it means that you're very popular at the same time, right? Because when you say something, everybody repeats
it. So now we're doing a show together. Excellent.
No, it's fine.
Anyway, whatever. I mean, like, we've resolved that as things. I don't give a fuck about ERLs or the LFL or France in general, mate. Like, I am from England. That's just who I am. So let's start talking about fucking LEC. So spoiler, I'm going to give everyone out. I'll even do this for Dom as well. Here's the sort of lay of the land of how this episode's going to go. Here's the scouting report, Dom. Because if you have the scouter report, this is going to be a banger episode. But otherwise, we could fuck up. Here's the issue, right? Here's how you do this. You know, I always tell you, Dom, technically, when we have shows on guests on this show, I try not to make it like Crackdown, where it's just an interview. I try to make it more like, since this show is me and Dom giving our take each week on LEC, the guest just does the same thing. They just join in and give their take, and then there's interaction, right? So here's where it's going to be interesting, Dom, because you have to understand, the thing with Zabatine, I was talking about this on my watch party I did on the weekend, so I'll say the same thing here, basically. You have to understand, he's a bit like, if anyone's ever seen in CSGO, we have an analyst in that game called Maniac, who's Swiss, actually, and he has a similar vibe, basically. What will happen is this, Dom, he'll never hard flame a player. Like, he'll never say a player is shit, he will never say a player is bad, he will never, for example, like, just speculate, like, oh, the comms are just trying, he'll never say something like that. He will always couch it in, like, disclaimers, basically. Now it is worth saying.
So he fits right in. He does exactly what we do.
The problem is, though, the issue is this, though, Dom. Because it's entertaining, we don't always put in a million angles. Like, we don't just say, like, well, I personally think that my perception of this, we just say this team is crap because the logic is, like, we gave our thoughts. So basically, that's where it'll be a bit different. So all I'll say is this. Basically, just don't worry about it. Just give your thoughts. He's going to say his totally different anyway. And the joke is, half the time, he might even agree with you, but he'll couch it in such a different way. The fans will think he gave a totally different point. So it'll all work out great, don't worry. I've worked in a beat like this before. I actually think it actually works well for a show like this, because he's going to balance us out a little bit, mate, because I'm going to absolutely say people should be kicked out the league and all the classic Thorinisms, you know.
Look, I can't say. I know that you do your streams generally in French, right? Like, so you do a lot of your analysis in French. At least when I've checked your stream, you've been doing it in French. And, you know, maybe there's a culture difference. See, Americans, you know, we like the brashness, the toxicity layered in to just make the entertainment flow. So I guess that kind of, you know, it's like the Immortals point. I'm like, here's why Immortals sucks. Do the full breakdown. And then it's like, why did they get them all? Because they're French, like, and then that's the part that they all attach to. And that's why we have this great conversation at the beginning of the show.
This is what I say to Thorin, is like, I used to be like you guys. I was on the French broadcast. I was making, like, it's just like, this player is fucking dog shit. I don't care. Like, he should, like, just play better. And eventually what happened is, being on the other side, right? See, like, first being with the players and seeing, like, the repercussion of what's said on them. But not only that, is like the repercussion of what's said on the people that actually manage and hire these players. The problem is what I say, if I say it, and people just take it as like, oh, it's a fact, I know it's gonna have repercussions. Like, for the French industry, for the French audience, because I do think that my voice is sometimes heard, I try to disclaim as much as I can in a way that people can just take it as a matter of fact, and they can just follow blindly what I'm saying. So it's just what I do. So Thorin told me, like, he's completely
empath,
opposite.
And we're just sociopaths. We don't give a fuck about anyone else. We're just here to ruin careers.
I did try to explain this to him, though. One of the reasons why I personally explicitly don't do what he's talking about is because I've actually done that with my work in the past, Dom, like my written work in esports back in the day. I can tell you it has no effect on the fans. The fan will take an incredibly, like, nuanced paragraph about, like, just where is someone in the rankings or how good they are. And they'll still at the end go, so you just hate him and think he's shit then. Like, the joke is they just hate the same fucking sentiment anyway, man. So I don't worry about it personally. So let's get into it anyway. Because let me just
give my take so that everyone doesn't think that I am a just complete sociopath before we get into this. Because it's like, you just flame all the players and you're just ruining their lives behind the scenes. What I do is I try to just actually be honest in whatever I say. So I think that is the core part for me. I don't care as much about how it comes off as that I am being honest with, like, what I think is good, what I think is bad, and how I see League of Legends. So that is, like, how I'll always end up going through things. And it's not like I'm trying to be overly mean. I just try to be, like, I just want to say what I think. That is the main part of, like, all my analysis that I do. Yeah. So obviously sometimes there'll be embellishments, but I hope that the more intelligent viewer can tell when I'm just trying to be entertaining or trying to be funny, and when I'm being serious about, like, a real problem within the game. No, that's my little defense there.
I'll just throw this in there. I'm different from Zabatine, because I do want teams to kick people out who I think are shit, and I don't like Zabatine. Like,
you want them to be depressed.
You're like, look, that is my take, but I hope you didn't act on my information. No, I hope every fucking Carlos watches this episode, right? Yeah, get him out of the team, get upset in the squad. Like, that's what I want at the end of every episode. Okay. But I'll also add in as well, the reason why I can say, like, Dom, it's not as big a deal to me is because I'm also not pretending I am, like, the only authority in the world that everything I say is a fact. Like, It's just my take. So if you go and fucking spend millions or kick people based on my take, then you should get the consequence of that. Either you think I'm smart and you made the right call, or you made a terrible fucking call. You just listened to a guy raving in a fucking YouTube video.
Yeah, so Thorne is the type of guy that he sees Fake God's Twitter profile after he gets kicked from Dignitas, and he takes away his profile. He makes his bio just say nobody. It just says nobody on it. Deletes all of his tweets, deletes all of his social information. And you can tell he's going through a hard part. And Thorne's like, got him. Like, nice. Like, thank God they got him out of the team. You know, maybe Dignitas could win something.
No one has a human right to play Professional League Legends. I've tried to explain that to all these women who keep telling me, there's a lot of women in esports. It's not fucking paradise, is it, you idiot? Just failed. You have to be good. Like, come and try and be good, you fuck. So actually, let's jump into this, because I tell you who is good right now, Zabatine. Probably the most interesting team I actually think to talk about in the LEC is Mad Lions. Because if we think about it, not only are they a great example, there's obviously so much you can talk about with how you balance out a roster. I mean, they're a great example of how literally one player difference makes a team look terrible or look like the best in the whole LEC. So, like, we've obviously talked about all the past episodes. Give us some fresh thoughts. What are your thoughts on Mad Lions, Zabatine? Like, for example, are they the best eye test team for you in LEC? Do you have them at the top?
I feel like they're probably the most consistent. They are very, like, what I like with Mad Lions is it's one of the few teams that actually wants to fight. Like, Nitsuki, as a player, really wants to fight. And I think Alioya always wanted to fight as much as he can. And I really like the fact that they actually picked Nitsuki. I feel like Rika was way too soft, I would say, as a mid laner to be able to fit in such a team. The pacing of Mad Lions is pretty aggressive as across the board. I just enjoy watching Mad Lions because it's creative. It's very diverse in the picks. They can play a lot of like play styles, even though like we've seen them on probably the most boring meta of all time because it was Azir Corki for 6 weeks.
Which was completely like team's choices. It wasn't the actual meta. It was just what everyone in LEC was deciding to play. They wanted to play that boring style. They didn't actually have to do it, which is just a distinction I want to make, because in LPL, we see completely different meta. Silas,
yeah, that's
fucking
true. That's true. And from LPL, actually, a lot of teams have started to pick Lissandra and Swain and actually ignore the fact that Corki has to be matched with Azir. I completely agree with you on that. But yeah, it's overall a team that I feel to the core is very similar to the ID on which they built the original team. But just they actually chose Nitsuki, which I think fits perfectly, because what he's done with Blaber, I think no mid laner has been able to do that with Blaber since then, right? Like if you see Blaber on the Nitsuki era and you see Blaber since Nitsuki left.
Right, Dom, I don't know where you want to jump in on this, but I think there's tons we could talk about Mad Lions. I've got a whole load of topics on this one. So like, I'll give it, do you want me to suggest an angle? Do you have a big angle you're talking about right now?
I mean, I don't have like a really revolutionary angle or anything like that, but I mean, I just agree with the overall sentiment that they are looking like the strongest team in LEC. And I would just say that over the course of the games that they've played, sure, they've thrown some games that they've lost. I mean, they threw the two of the three games they lost.
Yes.
They only had one bad game this entire time where it was like, what the fuck are you doing, guys? Which was the XL game where Alioya just played like shit. Probably the worst game I've seen him play in his entire career.
In that game.
Yeah, I mean, he just griefed it completely on Lee Sin. You know, that was just, oh, my bad, guys. Like, I had a bad game. What are you going to do about that? I can easily discard that if the other 10 look good. So, I mean, I just feel like they obviously are the only team within LEC, besides for maybe SK sometimes, that actually plays the early game. It seems like teams are so willing to just handshake everything. No counterplays, no dives. It's just kind of like, we're farming. Oh, you went to Herald. We're going to come watch you do Herald. Oh, you got it. Okay, we're going back bot lane. Like, there's not really that fight within other teams. And you can even tell from the first weeks of watching Mad Lions play, the effect that Nitsuki had on the team on just fighting for small objectives. Like, he would drop a fucking ward. It's like, there's a pink ward here. We are dying for this pink ward. Like, this pink ward stays in their jungle. If they come, we're fighting because we're stronger right now. They would just have those little catalysts for the fight that we didn't see other teams having. So, I mean, I just think that they have a good sense and they have a good mentality about how they want to approach fights, like when they actually do it. So, I mean, I think overall the team just looks the most solid. When you compare it to Rogue, who's also 8-3, I mean, they're tied for first right now. I mean, in Rogue's losses, just, and even in some of their wins, I mean, the Rogue game versus Mad Lions, that's a Rogue win versus Mad Lions. I guess they have the head-to-head over Mad Lions right now. That doesn't look like a fucking win to me. You lost for 26 minutes, and then you won for the last two. You won from minute 27 and minute 28. I'm not going to say that you're the better team based off that. So I at least like the way Mad looks stylistically based on the fact that they are not afraid of making plays.
Yeah, the funny thing is, Aberdeen, I noticed with all the top teams, because at the moment G2 isn't the best team, and the teams that are on top are teams that, at least with this version, like even though Mad Lions are technically the champions from last year, like no one obviously treats this lineup like the same. If you look at the new squads that are on top of the league, I actually can see why people say Mad Lions they think is the best, because they essentially start every game ahead. Like, dude, they actually are really good, Aberdeen. Like as I put, when he was saying that, Dom was saying, I was just thinking of that watch party in LCS where, like, I think there was a game, I think maybe it was like EGTL or something. There was a game that was like 9 minutes with like one kill or something in like a matter of time.
Yeah,
it was
100 keys against EG. 100 keys against EG.
Definitely never going to be like that, mate.
No, dude, like, the three games we watched in LCS last Sunday were very, very, like, hard to watch, like, extremely painful. But, I mean, for me, it's more consistency. It's very hard to rate, like, the level of a team when you don't play series, because they never have the chance to actually have like back-to-back match against this, like a good opponent, which actually shows much more about what you are able to do, right? Like the loss against Rogue should not exist, but I would like to see like some 2-1, some 2-0, some convincing wins. But across the board, there is not a single discussion about which team is the most consistent at playing well, right? Because like results matter. That's the only thing that matters in sports, but like the way they play, you know that they're going to be kind of like competitive during the playoffs. There is no doubt that I'm already pretty confident in stating the Mad Lions as a high chance of actually securing top three position and going to Worlds, because they play well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, except like a completely collapse of the system or like a huge change in the patch, but knowing the players they do have, seeing Elioia playing like, I remember him playing Lidia and Udyr and like being completely fine. He played way like a huge range of metas. I know that like they will always find a way to make Armut play something. And their bot lane seems to be pretty good at playing laning dual lanes or like skating ones, because they play skating lanes in the spring split. So I don't really see like something changing in the game that much that they wouldn't be able to play. So besides a major collapse within like team, the people, I think they're pretty set for at least playoffs. We'll see for Worlds.
I mean, they should be a set for Worlds. I mean, saying they're set for playoffs doesn't really mean anything, because like every team is going to get into playoffs at this rate. I mean, obviously like SK is looking a little bit better, but like the teams with 5 wins, like Misfits still has hard games ahead of them. Like you have Fnatic at 5-6, having 3 games up with 7 left to go, you gotta assume that Mad Lions is gonna be able to make it.
I was mentioning more good showings in playoffs, like being more in the upper bracket and have a good showing in playoffs and probably like competing for the top 3, top 4. Being in playoffs is already, yeah, I agree with you, it's given.
Okay, so for that, I mean, I think that the issue that I have right now is that there's so much less hype for me in LEC playoffs because of the way that Worlds works. Like getting 4 seeds is crazy, because I mean, this we could transition this into the topic, because recently it was obviously released that you're now getting 4 teams into Worlds instead of 3 because of the LCL not getting a spot to give the spot to the next most competitive region, which was LEC. But I think that the whole problem with that is there's a high likelihood, like the most probable thing that will happen is that 3 teams will be guaranteed to go to Worlds before they even play a game. So the seed number 1 is going to be guaranteed no matter what, because if you're seed number 1 going into playoffs, that means that even if you lose your first match, you're going to be higher seed than the loser of the match under you, which means that you're guaranteed into round number 3 of the lower bracket. So you're guaranteed Worlds already. And if number 1 beats number 4 in the first round, then 2 and 3 are automatically guaranteed as well, because they're definitely going to be higher than the 4th seed as well. So don't you guys think that this is a little bit of a fuck playoff bracket, where the most likely scenario is that 3 teams end up going to Worlds before even playing a game?
It is, but here's the problem, is this is the issue I personally have with the entire Riot circuit, is that the Riot circuit in theory is supposed to be a domestic championship into an international championship. But what you've just essentially said there, but I agree, is no one actually cares about the domestic championship if you've already qualified for Worlds. Like, it should be enormous. They should be like, I've always thought they should flex it more. Everyone should have like a ring when they win, and you should have badges and all this cool stuff that they did in Korea, because otherwise, yeah, like you're saying, especially if you're anyone who's ever won before, by the way, like if you're like fucking Caps, yeah, if you just make the top 4, who gives a shit, you're going to Worlds anyway. Like, yeah, true, having like 8 instead of 7 is great, but like you've won a billion of them. So I get what you mean, Dom. I agree, it takes like the, I do think it will make it a lot less hype in the playoffs. Like, not for me, I care about who wins LEC, but I think the players themselves probably don't care as much. I don't think it's as big a deal. And especially, like, look, they'll care once they get to the final. Obviously the 2 teams in the final want to win, but the problem for me is the guy who, like, as you say, he just makes worlds immediately, and then maybe they're the one who doesn't do well in the playoffs. That's going to feel like they're just going to be phoning it in. It won't feel like a real playoff run, I think. What do you think, Zapatine?
I mean,
I mean,
I don't really care. It's just the format hasn't been thought with that in mind, so it's pretty hard to blame it on the format, right?
But I feel like they could make a small adjustment to actually fix it.
Yeah, what would you do?
So just the fifth and sixth, instead of playing each other, they both, it's like the same as the lower bracket in LCS. So the fifth and sixth are separated. Instead of playing each other to see who plays the fourth seed, you have the lower seed coming from the winner's bracket, play the fifth seed, and then you have the higher seed play the sixth seed. So then you at least have to play one series, and you have to win it to go to Worlds. At least you show that you're better than one of like the lower seed. So that's like that would be my small adjustment without like reworking the whole thing.
I actually really enjoy the regional qualifiers. Like maybe I'm just like living in the past or something, but I just really enjoy the fact that you had the playoffs. And you were very excited about like thinking who's gonna win, and the winner and the runner up will actually go to Worlds. And for the third slot, you had this whole small championship that created a new layer of excitement during the month of September. And it's like, who's gonna join, right? Who's gonna take the train? And so you had all this extraordinary gauntlet, right? The river sweeps come Cloud9, for instance, in NA. In EU, you had some amazing other gauntlets. I just don't like the idea of like, we play the playoffs. It's like, oh yeah, okay, you're eliminated and you go to Worlds. Because the end goal for the players, for the staff, for the audience is like, who's gonna go to Worlds? Like if you top two, I was like, okay, you lost the final, the eighth side, and then you just go to Worlds and you go scream. So no one cares as much as if you have the climax of the final, which is an actual final, and then you have the climax of the original qualifier that actually it's actually a final to go to Worlds, which doesn't happen in a new format.
Like the way he's put the point, the distinction he's trying to make, which is a good one actually, is essentially this. In Dom's scenario that he explained, you can essentially win no games and just be told, like, well, good luck, because like number one seed won, you're at Worlds anyway. And you're like, oh, okay, cool, I guess. Whereas if that was like you had to win the gauntlet and you go through all those matches at the end, you win, it's going to be a way bigger sort of like flashpoint moment for your team, isn't it? It's going to be like, right, this is what we fought for, guys. Like, it was the last spot and we won it. And like, that's going to be a way different vibe than as if someone sort of throws you a Worlds thing. Like, there you go, have your Worlds slot. Like, it's not going to mean as much as it. I think you've got a good point there. Let's get back into the Mad Lions shit though, because here's the thing. I'll just go through a bunch of points on this. I thought a good topic, actually. You brought him up, El Yoya, obviously there. I actually think this is a great topic to bring up, because since there's been so much turnover with teams, I've noticed this is one of the few splits where I don't feel like many names have been consistently put forwards as MVP candidates. I haven't seen like the one big name, except for maybe when like G2 was winning the first games and Caps and Smurfing and Jankos, you know. Because, dude, I think El Yoya has to be in this MVP candidate discussion. Like, for me, like, look, obviously within his team, you could have the discussion, who is it, Nishiki, El Yoya, you could do that. But I think El Yoya's been a banger, mate. He maybe had like that one dodgy game against XL, that's about it. Aside from that, he's had some fucking Smurf games, man. He's looked really good to me.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think that it's a lot easier to play when your mid laner is so active as a jungler. And I mean, maybe I'm biased towards this, but I think that you can just see the impact that Nisqy made on this team. Like, think about them last split to this split. He's the only change. It's literally the difference between not making playoffs and potentially being the number one seed. Like, if that's not value, I don't know what is. You know, to me, that's what I see is the most valuable player in LEC currently.
Nisqy?
Yep.
Yeah, he's basically saying he would take the Nisqy side of it. Yeah, essentially, if I think El Yoya's mega, it's because of Nisqy, right?
I feel like Nisqy overall, because probably he's not like a single carry man in teams, he does he gets robbed of the love that credit he deserves as a player. Because, I mean, if you take his track record, every single jungle he's played with has been showing insane performance. From Lyra to Blabber to Xerxes,
right? Yeah,
it's like any mid laner. Last year it was who was it in jungle Fnatic? It was Whipple. So if you do look at it like in the big picture, I agree that like Nisqy not only is a fantastic teammate and he brings way more than just like his value as a player, but he really activates the team because he's ready to pull the trigger to actually do something in the map. Like staying in the lane and getting like a lead of like 2 plates and 3 CS that doesn't mean shit to him. And I have a lot of respect, and I would agree with Dom on that. Like, I don't think there is to be frank, there is not a single player that has been really shining in any position to me in LEC. Like, for instance, Spring Split Video was a candidate. Hidi Seng was a candidate as well. Marurang was a candidate. Like, you have three players in three different teams that were really, like,
dragging. Just as a disclaimer, because I didn't say it at the beginning of the episode, Zabatine also personally coaches with Vethior. So just for the context when he mentions him, that he has a relationship with him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that, for instance, Displit VTO has been showing any, you know,
not
like...
Just French. Just want to throw that out there as well. Another disclaimer, it has nothing to do with the French vibe.
You want to give me more shit that you already didn't? You want to
give me the damage done? It's just so kiddy, man. No worries.
But yeah, I feel like besides Niski, there is not a single player, because I feel the level in LEC is pretty low right now. And the only thing I have a hard time with Elioia, for your point, Thorin, is I feel like the greatest, like last year there was Inspired, Elioia, and I would say Razork. I think Razork has a very bad year this year. I don't think there is any jungler that's actually like a fantastic level jungle. They're all pretty good. But there is no like superstar jungler in LEC at the moment. You can put Jankos here and there, but I don't think, like, for instance, Inspired was for me the top two, top one jungle last year, last summer split. And since he left, I think there is not that many players that can actually match Elioia. So that's why I feel like people will feel like he's so good. Is I think there is not that many candidates, like, besides Marong probably, that can actually put pressure on him.
You know what? I actually even think, when I'm thinking about it, like all the different teams Niski was on. Dude, I actually even think, like, if you take the nameplates off and you only use the eye test, I think this might even look like the best Niski team he's ever played in, mate. Like, people are going to think of, like, the Cloud9 team. The problem they had was they didn't have any competition, did they? Like, fucking FlyQuest was their competition, for fuck's sake. So the problem with that one is we never went Irma size, so we never saw how good they were. And then last year, dude, I think that Fnatic team in summer is one of the most overrated teams of all time. Everyone forgets the almost finished fucking like sixth place. They almost finished sixth place. So like they went to Worlds great after a million game fives, and then we never saw what they did at Worlds. So like I don't know why everyone acts like that was like the god team. I was just impressed they made the final and Worlds. That's good. So I actually think if you look at all the squads he's been in, I think this looks like the best Niski team, mate. The whole team looks great since he joined the squad. Like he actually has somehow sort of set everyone else in their place. Like it looks awesome. Just looks like a fucking great coherent team.
Yeah, the players have been selected around an idea. It's not just they've been picked because they're good, because for that you can go to Vitality or Fnatic, right? They are good players, they've been picked because they're good. They have been picked because they cater to an idea of the way that you want to play League of Legends, and they have assembled pieces around an idea, and that makes a whole world of difference.
I mean, I was just thinking right now when you started mentioning MVP candidates, and I feel like you have two players from Bad Lions. I don't even know who else you would throw in as a potential MVP. I was thinking maybe like Patrick, like that is somebody who could maybe be in the conversation from XL. Like, I don't think anyone in Rogue has been exceptional. Like, I mean, maybe you throw Nicky X in the same. Larson, yeah.
He had one really smurf game against Fnatic, I thought. He looked fucking mega in that one. I think he looked pretty good in that one. His problem is just not that flashy a player. Like, at the end of the day, doing loads of, like, a Zay auto attacks isn't fucking sexy, is it? Like, it's just good. It does a lot of damage, but it ain't sexy. That's the problem, so... Like, that's the thing. Well, I'm thinking of who else can be in there. Like, I think Larson could maybe be in there, especially with how many games they won. Let me think.
I mean, you gotta put somebody from X. I mean, I would say somebody from like XL either. I mean, I wouldn't say Mark Kuhn, even though I think he's playing well.
Fans will probably say Mark Kuhn, but yeah, I don't know.
I would say maybe like Patrick or Mickey. I'd throw in from XL. Mm-hmm. But I mean, those are the top three teams right there: Rogue, Mad, and XL. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty hard to pick one right now. And like,
those are fair picks. Sure.
You're not putting anyone from G2 with them being 6-5 right now in the MVP conversation when they came off a championship, right? Like everyone's been looking shaky at points. So I mean, it's tough. I mean, right now it just doesn't seem like there's that many consistent teams.
By the way, if you just to wrap up the Mad Lions topic as well, I would also say, like, I don't think it's an exaggeration. Pretty much every player looks better since the Niski move. Like even like I think from the first weeks the team even looks even better. Like, mate, Kaiser is back to being one of the best fucking supports in the whole LEC again. Like, he looks mega. Like, we'll get to the topic, I'm sure, when we talk about Vitality, but mate, I always personally thought this is one of the other reasons I was always out on Kazi. I always thought it was Kaiser out of that duo who was the better player. I think that's just being fucking justified if you watch him without Kazi and you watch Kazi without Kaiser. I think that one just fucking solved itself with A-B testing. And then, mate, here's the other reason it can't be Kazi with some god ADC. Mate, Unforgiven's better than him in this team. I don't give a fuck. Unforgiven right now in Mad Lions is better than I ever saw Kazi be. Sure, they haven't played in the playoffs, so I can't say that like fundamentally, holistically, but like, I think Unforgiven Unforgiven is actually fucking mega, mate. Like, this Draven game this week was just, it's just a stud. That's like some side shit as well, guys. Like, he had all the meta champs before as well. Like, this guy's just good. He's just a really strong ADC. And whoever found that guy, what great scouting they did with him. Fucking great job. Ooh,
who was that Draven game? I mean, that Draven game, he was just absolutely fucking smurfing. Wild, I think it? the funny thing is that last year during Worlds, there was like the Mad Lions content creator that people were saying was a partial owner, but then it turned out he was a content creator.
Yes, the one who made that weird tweet. Yeah, sure.
Who made the tweet? He said, like, man, like, why is Karzy in this team? I would take Flocket over him. And everyone was like, boo, like, me too. I was like, fuck that guy. Like, you're a piece of shit. How could you say that? You're fucking gold. And like, now I'm just sitting here. I'm like, god damn, bro.
He's
like,
a missionary. Exactly. He's a missionary.
Like, he might have a point. Like, damn. Sure. So just thought about that when you were talking real quickly.
I feel like the conversation about ADCs always so skewed. It's so hard because I always take the example of Bean, right? You take Bean in the context of last Worlds playing with Hidisang, and I feel like when you're playing with Hidisang and Hidisang plays well, like, you're in the jacuzzi. Like, you can remember, I think it was JDG versus Fnatic in 2020. Like, Rakdos and Hidisang looked like the best dual lane in the world against like Chinese dual lanes, and then the next year you see Bean playing with Hidisang, and it looks absolutely fantastic.
It was against Top Esports. It was against
Top Esports. Yu-Yangia. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Jackie Love, that's what it was.
Yeah, exactly. And you felt like these players are insane. Like, Rakdos is the best ADC in the world. And what I see is like the common points about Patrick without Mekix, right? Playing with Advien, or it's the support, man. Like, any ADC that has been playing at Rogue looked fantastic. Hensama with Trimby was the best ADC in EU. You look upset with Hidisang, way better than any point at other point of his career, right? Whether you like him or not, he's still better now than he was in the past. So I would say there is a huge underestimation on like Kaiser as a player. And I know from the fact that he really likes to engage and play kind of an impulsive way. When he sees an opportunity, he wants to go for it. That's what great supports do, but you need to know that your team is following you. And I feel in that sense, Niski is enabling everyone because he creates this culture of like, if you see something, just flash on him. I will flash. I will trust you. And if you fail, we're just gonna laugh about it. Like, nothing's dramatic. Like, Niski just fails. It's just laugh about it and just like go to the next game. And I feel like that's so important. And I would say from Rogue, maybe Trimby would be one, because I feel like Trimby is kind of the hidden MVP of LEC to some extent. Because any player that's been playing with Trimby looked like the best ADC in the league. Yeah. And you look at comp right now, you look at comp in a Vitality. I mean, it was a way different from the Vitality team right in the past. But you look at him right now and you're like, man, is comp like an ADC genius?
Yep.
And obviously Trimby like plays a fantastic, like, immense role in that level.
I saw there were some fans in some of the match threads trying to like fucking suggest that like Trimby should be an MVP candidate, but like, I think that's a bit of recency bias, guys. If you go to the beginning of the split, he was having some dodgy games. Like,
well, I mean, his last game, getting hype
off this Fnatic game or something, you know, you're getting too high off that, I think.
Well, I mean, he just played a game of Sejuani support, looked fucking useless in that game, but I mean, I will say that he has been a good overall, and I agree with Zabatine's point overall. I mean, one thing I would say is I think Upset and Ignar back in like the Schalke days, maybe that was another duo that was close to like the Hillsong upset, where I thought that he looked as good. But I do agree. I think all AD carries are just kind of good, and there's a lot of really fucking bad support. So if you're a good support, I feel like you could abuse so much harder than a good AD carry can, because like when you look at like the AD carry, like, I mean, outside of X-Matty, right? And maybe Jesu. I think Jesu's been playing a little bit better. But outside of those two, you look at all the other AD carries. They're all fucking solid. I mean, Misfits is dealing with Neon. Like, you have Upset on Fnatic. Like, that's 7th and 8th place right there. Like, those are players that are tied for 6th. I think Kabi is kind of good. But then you think about, like, some of the supports that have been in LEC in recent years. And it's like, damn, like, the bottom end of support normally looks pretty rough. So, you know, that's a little bit of support flame that we'll interject. But yeah, I agree with Trimby potentially being MVP candidate. I think it just depends on where they end up and if they continue to look good.
I think we've got actually the perfect segue here, because the next team actually I was thinking of talking about, some of the discussion is definitely going to be about the bot lane. It is fucking Vitality, Sabatine. So here's the thing. I'm actually looking forward to this particular team, because I tell you what, if you're going to use all fucking disclaimers and couch all your sayings very carefully, be nuanced, you're going to have a fucking hard time. So get ready. Put your hard hat on, mate. You're going to work on this one, because like I just said earlier, right, I've always low-key, I'd say hater just colloquial. I don't obviously hate anyone. It's a person, right? I've sort of kamikaze hater. I do think he's mad overrated. And I don't care how many people come on my shows and tell me he's great at calling up the target in a team fight. Like, that ain't enough. Like when I watched this last weekend, Zabatine, I see him in the bot lane. Like, that lane's just fucking garbage. Him and Labrov is nothing. It's like they have anti-synergies. Look, they don't even look at this. They even know they're on the same team. He just plays crap and still dies loads. I don't know how an ADC player dies as much as this fucking guy does, and then I get told he's a brilliant ADC player. Like, you're an ADC player, stop dying. And then Labrov just does nothing. And the reason that kills me is this, because if we're going to do the same model we just did there, we use the lens of the support and the ADC, it's not a solo lane, right? Well, I have to say, you know what, as much as this is going to sound harsh, like, I don't think Labrov's very good in general. I've never seen him in LEC be good. I know the hype from when he was in ERLs and when he's solo queue, but I get that he's clearly got skill, right? But what I don't get is this, Zabatine. When I saw fucking Labrov play with Crownshot, he was all right. He wasn't like this. He wasn't like fucking shit every game. Like, that bot lane was all right. So I'm really concerned about this team. Like, I know everyone else normally focuses on the jungler or Alfari. Like, I want to have this discussion. So come on, Zabatine, give me your thoughts. What are your thoughts on the bot lane of Vitality in this sense?
I mean, I'm not a Kazakhstan, so I'm not going to fight against you for that. I feel like he had a very good showing in the last MSI he played in. I think it was last year. He was very, very good on Kai'Sa.
He played in the semis, you mean? Yeah, he did look good against whatever it was. Yeah.
He was good a year and a half ago. That is true. Yeah. I agree with that.
No. That's the only time I really seen him like as a top-level ADC.
Right.
Aside from that, I would say that I wouldn't say that like he's like among the probably like terrible ADC needs to be relegated in ARLs or anything, but he doesn't stand out to me. Like the player as an ADC that has been standing out for me since a year and a half, even though he was playing a worse support and probably not winning, was Patrick. I'm a huge fan of Patrick because I feel like I don't like ADCs that you need to inject the whole resources of the team in to actually have a functioning carry. Like, I don't like this type of players, and I don't like players that are just like ADC that are just like lane gods and they want to play Kalista every game, otherwise like the game is over. And I don't like weak size ADC either, like Kobe, that will not be able to play the strong side. I think Patrick has it all, right? He can, like, he's a jack of all trades in that sense, where he can actually carry on pretty much any type of duo lanes. I think Kazi in that regard has shown very good performance on Kai'Sa, and when he has Kai'Sa, I think he's a great ADC, but I don't think like he has anything standing out for himself. And Labrov, I don't know if he's confused when he plays competitive or on stage, but if he seems just to forget or not understand the rules of the game. Like the moments he goes for vision, the moments like the position around the wave, the trading patterns, the trading moments, the moments he like, decides to actually like trade with the opposite dual lane, doesn't seem to be reflecting the game theory, right? Like there is a missing piece in Labrov where some missing somewhere, because it's been some time now, right? He was a rough diamond from solo queue when like 2020
years ago now, yeah.
2020, right?
Sounds about right.
Yep. Yeah. 2020 summer.
So it's pretty hard to give him many excuses about it, because it's been like not a lot of players have the chance to have five splits in LEC. So for him, it's been five splits, and I still don't see like Vitality leading in the bot side of the map whatsoever. So it's pretty hard, because I don't think Perks and Haru have a great chance of like stomping 2v2s, because winning 2v2 in Europe is pretty hard. So it's Alfari show every single game. Otherwise, they don't have early game. They just don't have an early game.
Yeah, I mean, I think Haru just AFK jungles the entire time. I will say this, though. I don't know if this changes your opinion, Thorne, but I wanted to throw this past you. So, Labrov has recently hit rank one in solo queue again for the 18th time in the last 2 years. Do you now think that he might be just the future?
The sad thing about that, dude, is that's actually what kills me about that narrative. If I didn't know any of that information, right, it'd be so easy to just go... Because here's the thing, there's a million coaches obviously come on these shows, Zabatine, and then they know what the player's like in scrims or in the tryout, and so they have some different perspective. The problem is I always tell them, like, I'm not watching those games. I only watch the fucking pro games. So I'm sorry, I can't actually watch, like, 50 pro games and go, you aren't good, get out the fucking pro league. Like, oh, I'm great in solo queue. Then fuck off to solo queue. So my problem is that, Dom. I actually think it's like to tie into what you're saying, that if you're to do it as many times as he has, he must be really skilled at fucking the mechanical part of League of Legends. And he must even have some half-decent decision-making, bearing in mind he's playing support. The problem is, I get the vibe, like Zabatine was saying there, this guy looks to me like one of those players who just gets like paralyzed in the game. It's not that here's the difference, right? There are players like Hillisang will obviously inter load of times and lose you a game, but Labrov will actually lose games by doing nothing. It looks like he just gets the vibe of like, I don't know what to do, so fuck, just do nothing. Like, I actually think that's the worst way to lose a game. I'd rather my guy in, because he like, look, you made the wrong decision, but you made a decision. Like, I hate people who just sort of sit around and hope the game just gets won without them doing anything. I think it's just nonsense. How are you going to be a pro and do that? And also, you're doing that from the support position. Like, dude, that is the position that makes the players and reads the map and knows what's happening. You can't be the guy who knows nothing but be a support. What? That doesn't work. Not in LEC. Think of the names we were mentioning earlier, Zabatine, fucking Hillisang, Trimby, fucking Mickey X. Keep going. You could go like, fuck, yeah, they've got some amazing players at this position. Like, this is a team, remember, that's supposed to be a super team. They want to win LEC, go to Worlds. So you have to look at some of these positions and go, mate, how are you going to outperform like Mickey X? How are you going to beat out fucking Kaiser? Like, we've got too many good players at that position, mate.
Yeah, yep. And I feel like the solo queue argument for me is gone after Magi Felix career in LEC. I feel like Magi Felix is the epitome, right, of like a player that actually Hearthstones have 25 accounts in Challenger, 6 in the top 10, in the top 15, and yep. on the lane, right, when you watch the laning phase in LEC, it's like, no, it's not good enough, right? It doesn't match the standards of the LEC, and competitive is a slightly or a way different game depending on how you want to approach it, but it's definitely not like enough for Labrov. And I mean, the problem is when they assembled this team, to be frank with you, I was not really fond of the idea of picking perks that I've seen his laning in Cloud9 last year, and I didn't feel like he was playing perfectly. Like, it doesn't reassemble to a Chauvis lane or a Showmaker lane when you see him lane. Awesome. So I was like, okay, it's pretty rusty laning wise, because I mean, he's been playing ADCs for years and stuff like that. It's pretty late into his career. So switching and keeping that level is very hard. And coming back, it's like, oh, we're going to give him this whole set of insane players. But I don't see the ID. Like, I can't see the ID in Vitality's project. Like, whether it's with or without Selfmade, you have Alfari that's like, he's great at laning. Like, if he wants to pick a great top laner for laning phase, it's great, but it's not very serviceable for the team. And then you have dual lanes, like two unknown quantities of players that should be excellent but haven't been able to show it. And then you put Haru in the middle. No, it was Selfmade, not Haru. And I feel like it's always a one-man show or no show at all when you watch Vitality games. It's like one guy's gonna do like something amazing, like Alfari, or Per's gonna like have one of his shows. And if it's not the case, then it's actually one of the most boring team to watch, because nothing happens and they just lose.
Yeah, I mean, they have no synergy. I mean, one thing that I'll say about them is we literally got to see Unforgiven versus El Yoya this week. Like, we got, or sorry, Unforgiven versus Karza this week. I don't know why I said El Yoya. I saw his name on the screen real quick. But we got to see that matchup. And not only does Unforgiven just kill them like 2v2 in lane, like Karza just dies, gets Nautilus hook, dies. Then you have Unforgiven 1v2ing Karzy and Labrov. And at that point, it's just like, and that's also with them getting fifth pick counter pick. They got support counter pick. They saved it for R5. It's like, all right, you know what you're playing into. They pick Nautilus. Like, are you going to go something that actually counters it? They end up going Tahm Kench and they just get fucking clapped. Like, Unforgiven is literally like 6k gold up or some shit at a point. It's like 13k to 7k in that game. What more can you say? Like, at this point, they're just getting clapped no matter what style they play. When they play weak side, they're too far behind. When they try to play things that could contest, they just lose 2v2. I mean, it just doesn't even look like they're a team. They're consistently losing bot, and essentially the only way that they win is like Zabatine said, a solo lane pop off, and it's just not reliable enough. Like, other teams just know what to do. And to make matters worse, the jungler that they selected, Haru, doesn't even know how to play off winning solo lanes. Like, his solo lanes are winning, and he's like, nice, you guys are winning. That means I don't need to help you, and I can keep farming my fucking jungle. Like, that's his take to having winning lanes. Like, now I'm going to be strong, too. It's like, no, motherfucker. Like, this guy is like, just dive them. Remember the one game that they played versus Fnatic where Haru actually dove top on repeat for Alfari? Alfari just snowballed the whole fucking game, just won 1v9. It was just like, all right, now the game's fucking over. Do that some other times. Like, it's viable to do it mid, or like, you're gonna have to get other people involved. Tell your fucking support, hey, that motherfucker is an Inter bot lane. Come with me. We are diving top lane. We're winning the game right here. Like, they got to do something together. And just watching them, it's just like, you guys don't even know each other exist. You know, it's like everyone's just laning in there. It's like old school League of Legends where people didn't know that you could have multiple members affect the top lane, you know? That's how it looks. It was like playing in my day where it's like, wait, the support can fucking move? What the fuck? I remember when we figured out in season 5 that support could just group a jungle and ward all over the map. It was revolutionary. We saw like Chinese teams and Korean teams do it at Worlds. We're like, wait, you can group your support in your jungle. You can just maintain vision controllers too. How fucking OP is it? Wait, the support has CC and the jungler is damaged. You can kill the other guy. It looks like they don't even know that now, and it's season 12. So I don't know what the fuck is going on with them. It just feels like they will never be good at it because they don't have any player that instinctually understands it. And that's why the whole time everyone's been talking about Bo, because Bo looks like he'll at least just play the fucking game well enough. He has enough instincts for the game that it doesn't even matter what the rest of the team is fucking doing. Like, you'll be drawn to that level of just like fighting. You know, you see somebody fighting, that's really easy.
Have you watched this game? Because I've seen a clip of on YouTube where you were speaking about him, but I don't know if you were into, like, deep dive into his game. Like, is it that crazy?
Someone FPX back in the day, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I watched all of his games live when he was with FPX. So I saw all of his competitive games, and I track him on solo queue. I released a solo queue VOD review of his videos. I've probably watched over 10 of his solo queue games, just like the really absurd ones. I've never seen anything like this. Like, this is it's just fucking crazy. And, you know, it's not one of those things where it's like, oh, he's only played solo queue. Let's see if he can back it up. No, he made fucking pro, like, the top level LPL junglers look fucking bad. Like, he destroyed Karsa. Like, Karsa is one of the best junglers in LPL for a while now. Fucking stunned him. Like, it was just brutal, man. Like, he made that guy his bitch. So I'm really high on this guy. And, like, I've never seen anything. Like, if you look at his solo queue account, like, number one, he's been there for like 2 weeks or like 3 weeks now at this point.
Yeah, I saw the recall, like the, OPGG art.
Yeah, OP.GG art. That's what people call it. He's an OP.GG artist because you look at it, it's fucking beautiful. Right. Everything is blue everywhere. All the kills. You see games that you just don't see other pro players have. Like, he's ranked 15 in Challenger, drops a 27 kill Wukong game in 22 minutes with 55,000 damage on Wukong. It's like, what the fuck? Like, how is that even possible? You know, so that's another story. I just want to see that guy play because I feel like it's the only way that Vitality has any type of life in them, because at least then they're gonna have a player where it's like, oh, this guy is fighting, bro. Like, he's gonna int if you don't come to him in situations. If you're not matching pressure, he's probably gonna run it down, but like, you have a source to fight around. Like, you have a pressure point in the game. And Haru, man, he just does not cut it for me. When I watch Haru play, it just looks like he plays to not look bad. He's just one of those players that wants to end the game with like a good amount of gold, a good KDA, not be behind the enemy jungler and be like, nice, look, it wasn't my fault. Like, that's the type of game he wants to play. Not the, I'm going to do whatever it takes to win this game. He doesn't have that instinct.
I would like to add something on Vitality, because I feel like they have been, I mean, the organization has been wrong in the time they wanted to invest. Let me clear that. It's just, I feel like they wanted to go, usually I like when teams go with some rookies and then they try to build out of like the one that work. It's a pretty good strategy because you have a low payroll and then you can inject like money into your roster knowing that the cheap pieces are going to be good, right? This is usually the best way to actually build a team. And so the problem with Vitality is, so they started doing this strategy in 2020. And as far as I remember, because I was doing this off season, most of the contracts were locked. So, and there was not as many. It was not the year of the, like, I would say, golden generation of EU rookies. It was just before that, right? Like, EU mid laners that were like follower were like Aka, Militza. You had probably like one or two Magic Felix and stuff like this. But, and then the year after, so you had Nemesis that was playing, I think that, but the year after, you had Larsen, Vitio, Humanoid, and all these guys arrived in 2020. Now, Humanoid was playing that year, but Humanoid was already locked. So it was very hard for Vitality to actually elaborate a roster out of like rough diamonds and keep them. And so they tried to do that despite the market being pretty dry. And after a year and a half of failing, they actually ditched pretty much the whole team and went, okay, we're going to go like super. Yeah, we're going to go aside from Lebrov, and we're going to like spend a humongous amount of money. The problem is, I think that when they spend the money, the market for very high players is like, not, you're not importing Chovy, right? You're getting back Perse that's like at the point of his career where like, okay, he's probably like the most valuable player in the West of all time. I'm not arguing with that. But he's coming back from a year with Flannan where he hasn't been like as dominant as you would expect him to be. And you're going to with Selfmade and you're going with Alfari. It's just a lot of big names. And I feel like there was no idea behind the team. And I feel like they should have done the other way, which is go ham on the market in 2020 because there was a lot of very good players that were very expensive. and keep them for long enough, and then invest in the rookies this year, like Etukui that's performing very well in FlyQuest, or other ones that are actually very good, like Ragnar, Yike, that are performing right now in the LFL. And I feel like Vitality has done the whole problem of building a team upside down, and now they're like left with pretty much nothing, because at the end of the year, who are they going to keep? Like Bo and like Perks? Alfari, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, yeah. I mean, who knows? Like, they probably will keep... they'll probably just stay with LeBron until the end of his life. Like, I would assume he's going to be an 80-year-old man still playing. He'll still be rank one in solo queue. They'll still be fifth and sixth place, and they'll be like, oh, the next year is the year. So they'll probably keep him, but I assume that they'll probably make an AD change at least.
I want to get your take on something, Zavatine. There's actually a topic. It's actually just the topic of how Perks has played in this Vitality squad, this split that causes, for some reason, an enormous divide. I've almost never seen as ridiculous a divide as this. Basically, loads of fans still think Perks is shit now, mate. They flame him now whenever Vitality loses. Whereas whenever I watch him play this split, dude, he's good most of these games. He just doesn't have a chance to win because the team's just fucking garbage and half the players in the game away and do nothing. Like, obviously, the games they win, like that Taliyah game versus Misfits, he's just fucking shitting on them. Like, that was like, what, you're going to complain about that? But I think even most of the losses, he looks good. So where are you coming down on this, Sabatine? Is there a reason you think maybe, like, is there something he's not able to do in the team that's costing them? Is he actually good? Where are you coming down on Perks now, not past Perks? And obviously, we don't want to ride on the bandwagon of what he did in G2 and stuff. So what about this Perks? Who is this Perks?
I think this split is better. I actually think that he's better. I didn't really like the way he was playing in spring. I didn't feel like he was never terrible. But I would say that laning phase is very important as a mid laner because it gives prio, and early prio gives you vision, so side wave control, objectives. It's an extremely important thing because once you're on the side, you can just farm, right? You can just farm, rotate, and then you have your teamfight skills. But the early, I would say 12 to 15 to 20 waves of the game matters drastically. And I feel like laning wise, at least in spring split, was not that great. I feel like it has improved a little bit because obviously staying in EU makes you a better player. But I feel like he has the knowledge, but he's not for me the top, among the top player, best mid laners, sorry, top mid laners in the league when it comes to laning, which for me is crucial. In LEC, if you want to be a good team, you need to have a strong 2v2 mid jungle. And to set up your wave to be able to have a jungle impacting your lane, you need to be very intelligent and you need to be very aggressive. That's what Niski is. Niski is a very aggressive player. He contests a lot of minions. He doesn't let you get things for free. And if he knows that the jungle is coming, he's making it very spicy, trading. And doesn't hesitate to like defend a freeze for like 10, 15 seconds. Like, okay, just come at me. Like, my jungle is going to come and we're going to win this 2v2. I feel like Perks plays much more like, let's farm, and then I'll show my skills later. But he doesn't have this like edge that I've saw him having in the past. Probably because like there is a lot of great laners now in LEC. That's my take on it. But he doesn't play bad. I wouldn't say he's playing bad.
My personal take is it's because his jungler fucking sucks. The split, like, it's because he has Haro as a jungler. Whereas like, I mean, like Selfmade was good, but Selfmade's strength has never been like playing around like, you know, other players. It's always been playing around himself. And even when he played like the dog junglers or whatever, for some reason, it somehow always went bad. I mean, he would have like games where he would play well and then suddenly they would lose a fight here, or he would group with LeBrov and then like LeBrov would randomly die or something would happen. Like, it would just always somehow went bad. But when I've been watching him with Haru, it's like, I feel like you can't trade like that when you know your jungler is AFK farming. Like, you have to be completely self-sufficient. You have to play as if you don't have a jungler, which means you can't make the lane volatile. Like, in a lot of these games, you just simply can't do that, or you're just going to end up inting. Like, I mean, he probably could do that. And we've saw like games where he's lane gapped good players in spring split, but it's never been the solution to Vitality's problem. I think the problem with Vitality is, I mean, Alfari and Perks both have relatively good lane phase, in my opinion. My biggest issue is just like we said earlier, there's no cohesion. So you can't make anything. Like, if he does win a lane, it doesn't look like he won the lane. It's like, oh, he's got a 10 CS lead. He wins lane by 10 CS. And then they just like get a recall off. They get a free base and suddenly the whole game's like fucked off something else.
But isn't it a problem then? Because I feel like when you're paying for Perks, you're paying for this coherence as well, right? It's like, it should be like, helping assembling the team should be the main shot caller of the team. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, right? Maybe Perks has never been that player and I was wrong the whole time, but I always felt that like Perks was like the most impactful, I would say, locker room player in the West ever, and was able to actually create this type of synergy. So probably it's wrong, right? Maybe I'm wrong, but I want to know like what's your take on it. It's like, okay, he's not able to do it. It's a fiasco. It's a clown fiesta around him. So since Vitality is probably paying a huge amount of money to get a player that's like pretty good in lane, what's missing then?
Like, here's what I can't handle. I'm so tired of people in League of Legends doing this. They always claim it's me that does the fucking straw man. It's everyone. Straw man's me constantly. I'm in the fucking Wicker Man movie now or something. Like, what the fuck? I thought it was a police officer investigating a crime. Like, because here's what I don't get, Zabatine. So essentially, the premise goes, if Perks is such a great shot caller, then how's the team so shit? Think about the team, mate. So you've got Alfari, who famously has only ever laned his entire life and thinks we're on a twisted tree line right now. Doesn't even know there's a fucking 5v5 map. So already that'd be a miracle if that guy was amazing at grouping already. Then you've got a jungler who's fucking Koreans doing nothing right now. It's fucking terrible anyway. They already fired the last jungler, by the way. Labrov, we just discussed, does nothing and doesn't seem to understand how supports move on the map. And Kazi just fucking dies. Like, all I'll say is this, Sabatine, I'll flip it back on you, mate. Isn't he just a mid laner and a shot caller, not a miracle worker? Like, fucking hell, mate. Like, Pete, you guys are making it sound like he's like fucking Yu-Gi-Oh! And they're all the cards he's using. Like, they're actual humans who have to play the game with him, you know? Like,
that's true. You're right.
Like, because I'd say the same thing Dom did. There's the difference, right? If you're talking about how he plays mid lane, every other mid laner we're going to compare him to has a banger jungler. They have like El Yoya, Jankos, fucking Malrang. Like, he looks up. He's got Haru. Like, homie, what is he going to do? I feel like these are the old discussions back in the day.
Yeah.
Where people were telling me Xpeke is better than Froggen because Froggen doesn't roam when Froggen has washed up Snoopy. And Xpeke had like fucking Cyanide, but probably one of the best like cover junglers of all time. Like, give me a break. You can only play with what you've got, haven't you? Yeah. Like, you know, you'd be a fool to play that way if you had a bad player with your teammate, you know?
This is why I don't fuck with what you said at all, because you're saying, oh, well, maybe I was wrong all these years and he wasn't actually a good shot caller. To me, that's not fucking shot calling. Like, to me, like, I think that what he does is actually good within the lane, and he'll provide the information that you need to make the play. But I never thought he was the actual like season 3 version of a shot caller, where he was actually micromanaging his teammates, where it's like, you need to do like X camp and come here, we can pressure him. Like, I think that he's the type of player that will be like, this guy's chunked, this guy's low, we can pressure him on this wave. And then you have to know what the fuck that means. Pressure him on this wave, that means I need to skip this camp, I have to like go there right now. You have to look yourself and you have to make your own correct decision based on what happened. When he was playing with Jankos in 2020 spring, the last time he was like on a dominant team as a mid laner in Europe, look at how they played.
Look at how they played.
Like, Jankos just, and obviously Jankos is a smart fucking player, but I never thought that he was the type of player that he was like micromanaging Jankos. Like, you need to come right now on this wave and do this, this, and this. Like, I never thought that was the dynamic. I thought that Jankos is a good fucking player that has the natural instincts of what you should be doing in a game. And if Perks gave him that information that he needed and told him like the status of his lane, Jankos could make the good decision out of that information. But yeah, I mean, like, when your whole team is failing, and you can see multiple games for Vitality where they try to take a 2v2 and then suddenly the support's there, and it's like, I don't think that he was such a good league player where he was mindful of everything at the same time. I think his teammates also helped him feed him the information that he needed in order to play really well in those types of situations. So like when he was playing with Mickey X, for example, Mickey X is calling like, hey, the jungle, like, you can't make this play, the support is moving. Like, he expects his teammates to have some level of understanding their role that's going to filter in to how he's playing. And like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure if you took a lot of players out of a working environment and they put them on Vitality, they would look equally shit. Like, I mean, I wouldn't, like, obviously Caps has looked pretty fucking good in spring. Summer, the whole team's been a little bit messy, but I think if you put Caps on Vitality and you're like, all right, good luck, I don't think Vitality suddenly
go on further team. Here's the obvious ones, Zabatine. If I take your boy Niski and drop him in Vitality, are they winning all the games? They're doing nothing. He'd look fucking shit. Like, I think he's actually one player who would have a chance, but even he, I don't think, could make this team work, mate.
Oh,
I think it's a fucking flawed project.
I
will say this. There's one area I do blame Perks for on this team, which is I suspect he got to pick a lot of these teammates. I'll blame him for that, if that's true. Zabatine, if he picked these guys, if he said, give me Garzy and Labrador, yeah, then he deserves some blame. But, like, for his play, I don't think he's that bad. What's your take, though? Like, look, I get the vibe, maybe you think we've gone too far the other way and you weren't saying as strong as what we said, right?
I mean, it's... No, it's okay. I mean, I like Perks a lot as a player, so I just want to see I don't know. Since he came back mid, I feel like since the last G2 Spring Split when he was playing mid, I haven't seen him in a system where I've seen like what Purge is good at, which is playing on side and making his team rotate to him and actually like make this genius play that I feel like he's the only
with
one.
With you on that, put it this way. Here's the thing I would agree with. I would essentially agree. I don't think he can ever get activated for his actual strengths. Like, I think a lot of the genius moves he makes, there's no room to make that move. You're never even fucking ahead if you're Vitality. You're never in a situation to make. You know what I mean? I don't think he can do what he should do.
I mean, I would ask who's actually playing like that now in 2022. Like, I mean, that was a completely different game. Like, I mean, 2020, obviously G2 is just still G2. They were just the best team by far. So like, even though like they would in games, whatever, I mean, they didn't even look that good before they went on that playoff run. A lot of people expected Fnatic to actually win that. But in 2022, it just feels like the game doesn't work like that anymore. Like, but when you were able to make those genius side lane plays, you could give up a lot more objectives. Now you give up three Drakes, the game's fucking over. So I just feel like the game is different inherently. So you just have to adapt to the game, which I don't even think that he's done poorly. But I agree with Thornton. Like, yeah, I assume that the main two players that he picked were the two players that were not already on Vitality, right? So I think that he was, like, fine with Selfmade and Lebrov. But the two picks that he had, he obviously was, like, really high on Karzai. You'd see them interacting all the time on Twitter. They were clearly friends.
Yeah, like pals, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Alfari is the one that was distinctly leaked by the people that, you know, first talked about the roster move, that they wanted to play together. So he did pick Alfari and Karzai, which I do, like, have to give him blame on. I just think that the idea that he's supposed to be this, like, that he was something bad before, or maybe this exposes his prior career. I think that's
bullshit. No.
Like,
it was rhetorical, man. Like, I'm not questioning everything into his career. Like, it's this is annoying. Well, being a French dude and like and not like it's not my mother tongue and having things sometimes people misinterpret what I'm saying because of the tone. I'm not questioning what he was doing in the past at all. Like, I'm saying, it was just whatever. It's
okay. Here's the thing. What Zamati was trying to do was more like a food for thought. Like, look, here's a scenario I've presented. What do you think of that? Whereas I think we took it as like, how can he be any good if he's fucking
I'm not really ready to have red gay, right? Okay, let's move on.
Listen, it is okay. Yeah. We are going to fucking just chill, man. It's fucking, you know,
you do it so well.
It's okay. All the time, fucking Alice. Right, let's fucking go anyway. Now, as you can tell, this is a pretty XL episode by the length of it and all the conversation we had with Zabatine. Don't worry, though. We get to the actual XL team later on. But for now, I obviously want to tell you about esportsbet. Now, obviously, as you can see on the screen here, they have loads of the leagues. They have all the CB LOL in Brazil. They have the ERLs. They have LCS in North America. They have LCK. So if you want to know about Korean League of Legends on this channel, you can go and watch the Monty and Wolf show where they talk about LCK every single week. Obviously, we care about the LEC here on the Best Damn League show. And this week, look, as usual, there's always some pretty spicy upset potential in the LEC. There's actually quite a lot of good teams at this point in time. Like, for example, Misfits were big odds here against Rogue. Like, Misfits has caught some odd throws. I've seen some dodgy emotes occasionally from the guys from Rogue. But if you go down, how many times am I going to see one of these matchups? I told people, like, on Competitive Edge, the League of Legends one, the amount of times people are going to overrate the Fnatics and the Vitalities of the world because of the name value, but they're going to underrate XL because of the name value of them. Not as big names, haven't done much in the playoffs. The idea XL's an underdog against Vitality, I think, is crazy, because Team Vitality has non-existent 2v2 jungle mid synergy. We'd obviously discussed that on this episode, how important that is in LEC, as Zabatine tells you. Meanwhile, XL has one of the better ones. They have Markoon and Nukeduck. Nukeduck basically shaped Markoon, as far as I can tell. And now the meta's just hitting Nukeduck in the face, and everything's looking great. So I'm taking XL. They're at 1.912. I've had loads of times I've been able to get XL as actually like the betting underdog when I think they're the favourite in the game. Vitality's 1.861. Not the Labrov, Haru and Kazi I'm watching player. I'm taking XL to win this all day long. I think the meta's great for them right now. In fact, I'm going to go big on this one. I'm going to go the max. I normally do 1,000 max. You know what, actually, since they're an underdog, I'm going to say 1,500. We're going big boy on this one. I really think that it's actually a mega pick for the guys from XL. I think they're getting this one. I don't believe in Vitality. Definitely don't at this point in this split. And the idea that, like, look, they can win BO once, but I love these odds. Now let's get back to the show. So the other team to talk about now is the most boring team of all time, aka my favorite team, Rogue. Let's just talk a bit about Rogue. Because as I said, first of all, right? I'll tell you one thing that's classic about Rogue. One thing I love about them, Dom, is it doesn't matter who's in the team. On some level, they do actually keep the same, like, psychological profile as a team. Because this week, I could actually, I wish I'd done a video, because I could absolutely have told you, purely narratively, exactly what the outcome was going to be this week, and it was exactly what happened. They would have a banger game against Fnatic that Rogue would win, making you think, fuck, maybe they are going to win LEC, and then they'd have the game against G2, and just because the letters G2 are on the screen, no one in Rogue can ever win a game. We all know that. We've all been watching their whole career. Yeah. Like, this is like the classic fucking Rogue, like the tease and then the fucking dick punch. The stupid thing is they do have brief moments where I actually think, like for example, I think they've hit the meta pretty well right now. They look like they could draft pretty well. The players all look like they're peaking. But at the same time, like, the problem I have with them as a team is this. When they win, it's like it can look good or it can look like slightly ahead, but they don't look like the best team in LEC. But when they lose, they also just look like, fuck, are they the third best team again? You know what I mean?
I mean, it is what it is. Like, I mean, Rogue, it's like, you see the slightest amount of pressure come their way. It's like, okay, you're like the first seed team and you're kind of expected to beat G2 right now because G2's been struggling. How's it going to look?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you just have that game where it's like, yeah, I mean, whatever, man. Literally, even though, like, I can see that they do a lot of things well, their whole problem has always been mental to me, which is like, I don't even know how you analyze something mental. Like, if you're just watching from the outside, like, I can tell you what they're doing that's well, but like, am I not allowed, because I'm on the outside, I'm an analyst, to just like question their ability to do it in a pressure situation? That's like the gray area for me, because most of the time I'm talking about what teams are doing in games, their styles, how they like to play, what their drafts normally entail, and how they can beat an enemy based on, you know, countering their picks and bans and then drafting things that are good within their own system. When I look at Rogue, I never feel like that's the problem. But until I see them actually like overcome this hurdle and they start and they win a championship, I don't know how I'm ever going to give them credit for playing well. Because, I mean, yeah, it's, the G2 thing was just a microcosm of how they've always been. Sure, you can always say like, oh, well, it's just a one-off game because they played Sejuani. But for me, it's like, why does the one-off game have to come against G2? You know?
Yeah, oh, that's convenient, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. What do you think, Zavatin? Yeah.
I mean, I feel like they were a little bit more exciting than they used to be in week 3 and week 4. Silas from Larson and stuff like this. I've seen a few things that actually made me a little bit more excited than usually for Rogue. What worries me for Rogue is I feel like in the bad games, it's kind of the same players making the same mistakes. Like, you see patterns in the type of mistakes that Rogue makes, right? It's like not exploding like their lead in mid game and doing nothing, and then trying your Baron out of despair and like not getting anything, kind of losing hope, and then just not being able to finish the game, or getting picked quite a lot because, I don't know, communication is not great, or people don't know exactly like where the enemy can be. And this is like a consistent thing that I've been seeing them doing, whether it was with Hansama, whether it's with Comp, whether it's with Inspired or with Madarang. There is still this consistent pattern of mistakes that Rogue is making. I would agree that it's mental, but I feel like you can, they need to win once, right? Some blocks, like I remember of Jankos being he was known as someone who chokes a lot, right? I remember this game when I think he got outsmited when he was playing Nunu in a playoff as in H2K. It's a pretty old game. And it was the first game of the series and he got smited at Baron. And then the whole series is like completely shut down. Like in France, we have a team that actually has a jungle that does exactly the same thing as Vitality B. Like Skins is a great jungle, but one bad game happens or one terrible play happens and his performance drastically drops for the rest of the series. And they usually lose to Carmen, which is the favorite, even if they are like way ahead. And I feel like they just need to win once, like a series, a reference series, whether it's against Mad Lions that they lost against like back-to-back last year, or G2. And I think it's going to like unlock them to actually play probably more free, because when they do play against a lower level team, there is like, this is probably the safest bet you can have. Oh, you have, yeah, Rogue against, you have, yeah, Rogue against Misfits, Rogue against BDS, Rogue against Astralis.
Rogue against Astralis when they were 9-0. Oh wait, never mind. They lost to Astralis when they were 9-0 and they went 9-1. So
yeah, I mean, okay,
it's exceptional. Rogue one.
Yeah, I feel like
I
agree with what you're saying.
That's the team that's going to always storm the lower level teams because they know how they want to play and they're just going to win team fights because they're just better at the game individually. But against better teams, when they have pressure and they have small windows to make decisions, I feel like there is the energy is not there. I don't know if it's Odo, I don't know if it's Larsen, because they are the two, I would say, in Trimby, they are the two major points of this team. But there is something missing and it's very... It's very apparent. It becomes more and more apparent that something's gonna miss to Rogue to become a super team in the LEC for the future.
The problem I have is I actually do think Trimby is a player who some of this blame has to fall on. Like when I've watched him play, for me, he's like what, like if I'm sure you know the English term, like barometer. Like he's basically, he tells me how good Rogue is. Like when he's smurfing, they look fucking mega. But like, I'll give you an example. Even in the game they won this weekend against Fnatic, dude, what the fuck was that at like level one? Do you know what I'm referring here, Dom? Where the fucking Rogue bot lane walks down the river instead of coming through like under their tower. They walk down the river and Hillersang and fucking Upset decide to just make a play and go up into that brush and they're just waiting for them. And so at the beginning of the game, before they've even walked into lane, they end up having to trade something like three summoners for one summoner from Hillersang. Like, that, we haven't even started the game. There's not even a minion to be hit and you've lost three summoners just to get into lane. And why is that? Because you've just decided randomly for no reason, I'm just going to walk down into my lane instead of into my lane. Like stuff like that's like, that's like an exact, like to me, dude, Damatine, the way I read that is that's just a brain fart. That's like you're playing in this big pressure match, and then what you've done is you've just gone on autopilot, like, oh, whatever, we can just walk down here, can't we?
Probably.
And then what Hillersang's done is he's gone, like, I've played these motherfuckers a million times. If you fuck with them and you put them under pressure, they crack a bit. So he's gone for the play. It's fucking Hillersang you're playing as well. That's the other thing about that. What killed me about that move was this. I'd do that move against a boring team. I'm not doing that against fucking Hillersang. He's the master of trying to fuck with me in like the first three levels. That's his whole game, isn't it? Like, so like, even though they won that game, that just shows like the little cracks of like they just leave openings are just sloppy. Like, what's the point of that? I don't believe they would ever do that in a normal game. Yeah. Dude, they would just normally go to lane. Come on.
I mean, I give them credit there, because that was the quirky game, right? Where Humanoid was just randomly bot lane.
It's true, there was a 3v2, but even so, do you gain from walking into the lane like that?
I think they just think they straight up win because they have heal versus cleanse. So they're like, oh, we just win this 2v2. And like, they don't think that Humanoid could potentially be there. Okay. So I don't hate that one as much, because I think that there is like a logic behind it. I mean, it's just simply, we have heal, they have cleanse. We should probably just win at level one when most of the damage is coming through auto attack. So I give them a pass there, but I mean, I still see what you're talking about. I mean, the game that I think about when I think about that type of like choking play style is the other game they played against Humanoid, Hillersong, where Hillersong played Pyke in playoffs, that game one where they were playing Lulu, and then Hillersong just railed them level one. Where it's like, man, how does there's no like, dude. Maybe Pyke is the most broken champion in the game or some shit, and I just don't know it. But how does every AD carry that ever plays against a Pyke lane of Hillersong's get hooked like three times in the first level? Like, how is that even possible? How do you get hooked three times level one? Like, when I see that, I'm like, damn, Hilly should just play Blitz every game, because if you hook them three times level one, those are kills on other champions. So. Yeah,
true.
Yeah. So I definitely, like, I've seen that tendency in their play where they just, like, anytime they play against somebody, it's like, it's almost like they tell themselves, like, these guys are good, but don't overthink it. Don't get too confident now. Like you can't give them too much respect. And then they just play like borderline brain dead, where they're like, no, he's inting, so like, we're going to call him on his ints. It's like, wait, that's just not even a winning fight for you though.
Yep.
Sure.
I mean, by the way,
there are a lot of good things we can also talk about. Like, I'll give you an example. One thing that is like a massive positive, I think, is, mate, Malrang looked fucking banging on that Poppy. That looked really good. That champion looks like he really fits in, mate. Similarly, fucking Odoam there, you can now add him to that list. Look, at the beginning of the split, you definitely could not add him to the fucking Gangplank list. He can go on the Gangplank list now. That was good. He actually was able to hit the fucking barrels. Well played. So there are some positives in this team. Also, by the way, if you have a fucking Larson, it's not bad to just back into a fucking Azir meta. He's basically probably the best Azir in EU. Like, it's going to be easy playing that. And also, look at all the people who were just fucking up all the Corki games. Good luck playing the other side of that matchup. It hasn't been great recently. So, like, I think actually in general, like, there's a lot to like about the team. It's just like I say, that's why to me a lot of it has to go to like pressure or like intangibles. Because that's basically, I really do feel like Zabatine, if you could like brainwash this team and they couldn't see the nameplates, I don't think they would play this way. I think they would play actually better. Like, part of what you're saying there, like, I agree, they're just guaranteed to beat the low level teams. It's because in those games, it looks like they don't ever think like, oh, we could lose. They just execute what you're supposed to do, and they're a good team. So the real problem here is, like Dom says, because the one thing they've never done is properly get it done and win the championship. Until they get to that point, I think everyone's just going to be like, who cares, until they prove that, right? Until they get to that moment in the playoffs and they win, they can win as many BO1s as they want. No one's going to believe in them, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I feel like, as you said, like, I think Poppy was Malrang's signature champ in spring. I think he was the first one to actually bring it from Asia. But I mean, I'm excited to watch Rogue play most of the time. Like, when they don't have these boring games where they play Azir and they just, like, wait for the opponent, like, to BDS to shoot themselves in the feet and just beat them. It's pretty entertaining to watch. I just would like to see the full power Rogue, like a Rogue that's, like, a little bit more ambitious at, like, beating the top teams. Because I think that on the paper, if you take these players and you just align them against G2, I think that they have a very good shot at being better, right? Yeah. This is not great. Same thing with Mad Lions, and I really enjoy why is LPL so entertaining at the moment? It's because you have different teams that are very good at the game, but they play a very different manner.
Yes,
you can't say every team is playing the same way. Like, that's what bores me with Korea, for instance, at the moment. Exactly. I would say T1 has sometimes a little bit of a twist because they have players that can play like pretty weird champions, but aside from these small quirks, every Korean team is trying to play the Korean meta, right? So it's terribly boring. If LEC can inspire itself from LPL and get more of a, okay, Rogue is going to be more a slow-paced team, but they're going to be very hard to beat and they make no mistake. And it's going to be very interesting to actually win the fights. But Mad Lion is going to try to pressure them in the first 20 minutes. The problem we have is, like, whenever Rogue plays against a top team, you feel like, oh, they're not Rogue anymore. The only team that actually plays the same playstyle, no matter which the opponent is actually Mad Lions. This is what we mentioned at the beginning of the show. All the other teams feel like XL seems to choke against like top teams as well a little bit. Rogue is the same thing, and then you have Misfits that actually wins against the top team but loses to anyone else in the middle of the pack. So it creates very poor narrative, I think, for the viewers.
Perfect. That was actually that's the most key part about LPL that I've ever heard. That's the main thing that I always try to stress to my viewers, and that is why LPL is the most interesting region to watch, because you have teams like OMG where you just know who the fuck they are. Like, you see them and it's like, all right, so are you gonna ban Samira against this team? Because if they get Samira, they're gonna do whatever the fuck they want. Like, they're gonna play their Shyvana, Sylas, whatever. You know what? I completely agree, and I take back everything bad I ever said about you and French bias. So. There we are.
Easy losses.
We take it all back. You know, you weren't French bias. Immortals just sucked. It had nothing to do with the fact that everyone was French on that team.
Okay.
Just kidding.
Yeah. See?
I mean,
I can score.
What's the next team we need to talk shit about?
Let me think. We should definitely talk about Fnatic, obviously. Like, that's it wide open right there. So I have to say, by the way, right? Look, this is what's funny, right? Even though the take on Rogue, as you've just heard, is quite a consistent one. It's like, who really cares if they look good now? Unless they prove it in the playoffs, no one's really going to believe them. Everyone's waiting for them to choke, right? The problem is, there was a similar narrative with Fnatic, but I actually think now that narrative has actually run its course. I don't think we can keep pushing it anymore. The narrative went like this, Zabatine. Because on paper, this is such a fantastic set of players. Like, these are amazing individual players. I think all of them, in theory, they all, in theory, even the right team might even work and be really the best at their role, blah, blah, blah. Even now, they still trip over and win games. So everyone wants to believe, essentially, the super team fallacy of like, but if they all got it together, imagine how sick they'd be. But mate, I've seen too much now. I've seen a split and a half. Like, they're not getting it together. Like, the joke is, when it's been this long, this actually suggests they're never going to get it together. Like, I actually think this team's just busted, mate. Like the whole Razork humanoid experiment is over for me. Where are you on this, Sabatine? Because if we're talking about the idea of like jungle mid, synergy, 2v2, this has got to be, even though on paper it's good, in the practices, this is a terrible 2v2, isn't it?
I am terribly disappointed by the Fnatic project. I am terribly disappointed because when the season started, it was the team that I was the most excited about. Not only because they were great players, right? But it was I felt like it was possibly a versatile team, a team that could play throughout the year and be dominant throughout the year. Because it's very hard in League of Legends to go through different patches and keep like being that good. Sure. And I was like, oh, they have Wunder that can play pretty much like, I don't know, 120 champions in top lane because he picks up champion very fast. You have probably the best mid laner in LEC, potentially, he used to be. You had Razok, that to me was the best jungler in Summer Split last year with Inspired. And you have the best bot lane in EU, right? So it should be perfect. And I don't know. I don't know where to start. It's like, whose fault it is? I don't know. I feel like Humanoid is not playing well. I think Razork seems completely lost and broken. Like, he doesn't know what he needs to do. I don't think that in a team like this, Wunder is going to be, like, extremely motivated to, you know, like, grind 20 games on solo queue and be, like, on the edge of the meta. I feel like Wunder is going to be driven by his team environment and his upside. Like, if he's able to win and go to Worlds and probably like go to semifinals of World, I think he's going to be hella driven. But if he knows that his team is like middle of the pack and is not going to go like above probably just being group stage at World and just getting eliminated, I don't think that he has a drive to just show at Worlds and leave, you know? So this plus the upset Hilly Song, which to me is just a question mark. It's not my favorite. It has never been my favorite duo lane in LEC, but I feel like it's broken. Like the level they had in Spring Split doesn't show anymore. Hilly Song seems completely lost. So I feel like they have two very good, like they have a great support and a great jungle that are super good at creating opportunities for carries. They have three good carries, but somehow they've just broke it. Like, I feel like they did to Razorc what TSM did to their jungle. Like, that's the level of broken I see Razorc, because this guy was brilliant. Like, if you think about Misfits last year, like, every single game of Misfits in Summer Split 2021 started with Razorc gank. Like, VT yep. was farming, Hirid was farming, and he was looking for just a crazy opportunity, just ignoring a camp, trying to dodge a ward, give a good gank, burn a flash, do something. I see him this year is broken. Nothing. Yep. So I don't know. I really don't know. I'm so disappointed by the project as a whole.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I have a theory on how it is, where like a lot of junglers, you'll actually see this tendency where when they have complete freedom and they can just play the game the way that they want to play it, they play really well. But as soon as you start giving them information like, oh, we need to play around bot side this game, and like we want to make sure that we like do, like you put all these different things into their game of things that they need to accomplish, and they're very defined, it takes away their ability to be a real jungler, which part of being a real jungler is being opportunistic, being able to throw away the game plan and just be like, these are the kills that are available right now. And you can have in your mind, like, in general, we want to play around bot side. Like, yes, like, I don't want to be ganking for our fucking tank top laner and have our bot lane die on the same time and then just be trading, like, a really strong AD carry for a really strong tank. Like, sure, you don't want that to be the key, but you need to be able to have the liberty within your team to and the confidence from your teammates to do what you think is right in the moment. And when I look at Razorc play, I feel like he's just trying to do the right thing, but he doesn't really know what the right thing is, but he's listening to what other people say the right thing is, and then he's trying to execute that instead of actually really just playing the fucking game. Because when you see this guy, like, actually play, like, solo queue and shit, he knows what the fuck he wants to do. I just don't want to see him try to, like, cosplay some other jungler. Like, dude, if you don't come around mid, you know, one time and Humanoid dies, like, fuck it, dude. Just get your, like, play your own game. Stop trying to, like, serve the rest of your team. Like, just do what you're good at. And then I think the other problem with Fnatic is stylistically, when you look at them, they're supposed to be a bot side team. That has always been the dynamic of Fnatic. Like, you know, Wonder was somebody who could always play weak side top lane really well. And, you know, when you have Upset and Hilly, generally that's the lane that you want to play through. If you have a really strong bot lane, you know, I think of them kind of as like EDG, where you have like the Viper Mako bot lane in 2021, where they were able to like play through them. Like, we've got really good laners. We take the fact that they're going to outlane the opponent, turn that into dives, and, you know, have some type of synergy like that. And when the team actually did look the best, it was when they were playing like TF in spring in regular season with Razorc, and they were actually able to capitalize and dive bot. But I feel like Razorc, when he as a player was at his best, he was playing around Hirit. He was playing with Misfits around diving top lane and being able to play around solo. So he's somebody who naturally wants to play around top. So now he's trying to play around bot, but the angles bot are a lot different. It's not as much about ganking bot. Ganking bot is not much as much a thing. It's more about diving bot, like bringing your mid laner diving bot on timings, or like stacking a wave into diving the lane. Whereas like in a top lane, you're just way more vulnerable to just getting two man just killed in the lane. You have just more resources to generally kill. So I think that that's something that he's struggling with inherently. And then over time, it just feels like the multiple failings of the team has just made everyone lose confidence in one another. So they have this pressure that they feel like they should be a super team, and they don't want to like be the one that's dragging the super team down. But at the same time, like, they don't actually believe that any of their teammates are super. They're just like, man, this humanoid guy dies a lot. Like, is Gale Force on Corki actually good here? Like, should you be building Gale Force, or should you be going like Ludens like everyone else? I mean, who knows? Corki got changed. Okay, we'll trust you, man. But no one wants to be like the one that's like, that shit is dog shit, bro. Like, why did you build that shit? Like, don't build that. Build the real fucking items. Like, no one wants to criticize each other and really go hard on like the elite players, because there's normally this type of divide within a team where you have the player like Humanoid who comes in and he's the guy that's won all the championships recently. He's the guy that beat everyone else. So everyone's kind of looking up to him and trying to learn from him. And when you even hear about Yamato talk about the team, he references, yeah, we learned so much. Like, Humanoid's the guy that we all listen to. He told us all the stuff that we're doing wrong. But then when you have that type of hierarchy within the team, I think it just makes the person on top kind of immune to criticism. So I don't know if they're being real with themselves. I feel like that's the most important part. Like, Humanoid's dying to way too fucking much. He dies to everything, bro. You blow on that guy, he's falling over. So I want to see them actually address it and be like, yo, dude, like, stop dying to everything. You're a good mid laner. You don't need to die to everything. That was the main thing he worked out of his game when he became super in 2021, is that before in 2020, he was the mid laner that would die a lot. He would have those, like, 1 in 9 Syndra games where I was like, god damn, this guy's, like, literally dying all the time. I guess he's side lane, he's kind of strong. He was able to eliminate that from his game when he became really good. I want to see them do that again. Like, I don't see any reason why Humanoid needs to die level 3 every fucking game. Like, why does that Vex game need to exist? To me, it doesn't. So those are my problems with Fnatic. That's pretty much, like, my whole read on them currently.
Oh, good. On that topic, by the way, what you say there, I actually call those players you're talking about in CSGO when I do analysis, I call them royalty dom, because they're basically, like you say, when someone's won championships and they were, like, considered an elite player, as you say, they never get criticism even from their teammates in the same way. They are sort of, like, sheltered from the criticism. And in fact, the implication, even though this is actually toxic as fuck in a team environment, is, like, because he was really good 2 years ago, you can't criticize him now, even though he's just fucked up now. Like, that's terrible for any kind of problem-solving department. Like, it's why, by the way, if you actually have a genius player like that, I tell you what, if you're a coach, you pray that guy never becomes bad. Not just because it's going to be hard to fix the problem, but because you're going to have this whole social dynamic. Like, the problem with this is, it's like I've said on these shows, the entire narrative of Humanoid is he's the fucking Chad clutch player who always delivers in playoffs and he's always going to make a genius move. And the problem with that narrative is it never gets changed, even when he throws the game. Because here's the problem I have. I think this applies to both Humanoid and Hillersang. Both of those players, almost exactly from the breakdown in the playoffs, they've never recovered. They've never recovered, guys. Humanoid has been dodgy ever since. And Hillersang, remember, he was an MVP candidate last split. Dude, he might be one of the, like, bottom half fucking supports this split. Like, he's had some mad dodgy games. So, like, what I find crazy about this is there's two dynamics here that I think are fucked up. So if we go on the Humanoid Razork one, even though normally, look, I try not to read too much in out of the game scenarios, because he can have people, Koreans like this, obviously, where in person you would never think this guy's like some Chad player, but in the game they have like a totally different style. You can get contrast in styles. But all I'll say is this: if you ever listen to the way that Razork publicly communicates, if he comes on the post-game show, if he does an interview, if he tweets, dude, he tweets like a man who has zero confidence in himself. Crucially, like, in himself. His tweets are always just like, sorry, I suck, basically, or like, my fault, guys, like, you know, we could be better, but we're not right now. Like, dude, he doesn't even sound like he believes, like, he should sort of be there, because that's the problem. Like you say, Dom, the vibe I get is this, that, like, this is a guy where when he had sort of, like, carte blanche to do what he wanted, he was a good player. But I get the vibe, now he's expected to fit in with all these superstars. I don't think he has any clue what he's doing. And the worst thing is, to me, even though the people are putting Humanoid in that, like, shot calling category, again, when we say shot calling, we don't literally mean you micro your teammates. We mean, like, here's the general game, or here's what I'm about to do. You can join in if you want. How about that? Like, to me, that's what people like Humanoid were doing. So I don't think, like, fucking Cersei, and then it was the fucking guy that Shadow and El Yoya, I don't think they're all, like, being micro by Humanoid. I imagine, like, El Yoya looks like a pretty aggressive player anyway. I imagine they just sync up their player. They try and make plays at the same time. I never thought, by the way, even when the classic Perks Caps duo was there, I don't think they were talking all the time. I think they're just players who got on the same wavelength, and they could understand when to be at the same parts of the map. They look like it's the opposite. Like, Razork looks like he's just scared, like, has no clue what he's going to do. He has no clue what Humanoid's going to do. And spoiler, how the fuck could he? I don't know what Humanoid's going to do. I just know that in 2 minutes he's going to find a way to die, or he's going to randomly make a flank that doesn't exist and do nothing in a team fight.
I'd he even doesn't know what he's going
to
do.
No, that's the point. So if you're Razork, good assignment there. Like, you're supposed to just raid this guy's mind and then know he's going to save his flash at some point and not jump out when he's safe and he could get back to his side of the lane. Like, you can't. This sounds like a nightmare assignment for Razork. And on top of it, like I say, I don't feel like he had the status as a player anyway. Like, he can't go to Yamato. Mid lane is fucking up the whole game. How am I supposed to play? Oh, wait, that's the most legendary player in my team. My bad. Like, how's he going to do that? You can't.
Yeah. I think it's really tough. I mean, just the thing is, like, when Humanoid ints, it's like one of those things where it feels like everyone else is like trying to reverse engineer why he inted. It's like, huh, so should we have been here, or do we need to like be like, maybe he was winning the 1v1 before that, but it's like, it's way more simple than that. Like, motherfucker is just inting, like, just like, he inted, move on to the next thing. Like, you don't need, he's not some superior player. Like, you're all fucking good players. And I feel like this is normally what fucks up super teams, is just the inner dynamic, because the super teams normally have the highest level of superstars. That's what makes them super.
Oh yeah, of course.
So, when you have those players on your team, instead of like matching them with fair criticism, you try to figure out why they're right. as opposed to trying to figure out what the team should do. So that's my biggest...
I actually think they're doing that with both Humanoid and Hillisang, though. Because here's the problem. Yep. The classic line with Hillisang, you'll have heard this a million times, Abatini, it always goes like this, right? It's like you're willing to put up with the ints because that's the same sort of impetus that makes him do the genius play. That's essentially the same impulse, right? He's trying to go for a play. If it doesn't work, it looks like an int. If it works, you think, what a best player ever, right? Amazing support. The problem with that is I feel like they're applying that logic to every int of Humanoid and Hillisang. Like now, suddenly, they're just carp. They're allowed to just in whenever they want, because the logic is, like Dom says, we're just not 500 IQ enough to know what they were trying to pull off that would have worked. I don't think that is the case. I'm with you. I think they're just doing bad moves now, dude. Like, my joke would even be this. My joke would be, like, Humanoid right now is like a metaphor for Upset's career. Like, the joke is, when he finally fucking did something, he probably did more damage to Upset on his own team because of that Renata fucking, like, than the other team didn't he, twat? Like, Upset's like, can you just damage him? Can you damage the other team, please? Like, please? You're literally attacking me. You're literally my teammate attacking me. Like, then what's it? And then meanwhile, Hillisang's just inting in his lane all day long, and all the fans just go, because you know how they are, they just go, fucking Upset sucks at League of Legends. Like, again, what's he supposed to do? His support just goes off and dies on the map randomly. Like, what's he gonna do? Just win the game 1v2? Like, you know, like, yeah. I think that's why I say it. I'm sort of done on Fnatic now, dude. I'm that whole sort of, like, they could still trip over and win. They can't. They fundamentally cannot win. The joke is, even they know they can't win. If we had fucking Razork right now with fucking Truth Serum, he'd just break instantly and tell us, shit, I don't know what I'm doing. Please, can I go back to Misfits now, sir? Like, you know, like, he'd just give in instantly when he break.
Yep. I mean, it's sports. You're not writing a cookbook. There is no, like, written in stone way of playing the game and you're just gonna follow your plan. Like, that's a terrible way of approaching the game. It's like, what's our win condition in this game? It's like, I completely double on what you said, like, Dom. I feel like I learned that a lot from Will Meteos. I think he's a great player to explain, like, this concept. And it's like, I'm not gonna go, like, to, like, the theoretical win condition, because if this lane is bloody losing, what the opponent's gonna do? They're gonna drop, like, what? Sorry, you wanna cut me?
Well, no, before you continue that, part of that is that the other team also knows what your win condition is. You're playing against other pro players that, like, are like, oh, that's a fucking, like, lane they want to play around. So I just want to interject that in the middle of your point. But yeah, keep on going. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, this is the thing. You need to project yourself into the enemy team. So it's like, oh, okay, we're winning against this lane and this is their win condition. So what we're going to do, we're going to put wards. So as a jungle, if you go to your win condition, which is losing because they played bad in lane, like, for instance, he thing flashed and died, then you just walk on wards, and enemy jungle sees you on wards, so it's just gonna go to your top side, for instance, and just, like, get all your camps, and good luck, you're two level down. So now what are you supposed to do? Like, do a desperate Chinese play and try, like, the MLHG the game and try to come back from, like, three levels down? Like, no player, very few players are able to do that. So I feel like they're really trying to, like, write a quick book and not play the game to some extent, and that doesn't work. And on top of that, I feel like, as you say, the dynamic has been broken. I felt like they've accepted their fate. Like, they look like the body language of Fnatic, like Fatality, I feel like they're still looking for an answer. I feel like Fnatic have accepted the fate of not being the super team they wanted to be. And when you look at them, they look defeated from the start of the games.
There's a really classic Twilight Zone episode from the old black and white one, which was famously parodied on The Simpsons, so people might know the modern reference, which is the one where they go into another planet on a spaceship, and as they're finding out about these aliens, they keep finding out, like, a new piece of information that changes what you knew before. So classically, what they find is, like, Zabatine, at one point in time, they find a book, and it's called To Serve Man, and they're like, all right, so are these aliens, like, they want to, like, worship us and, like, serve us? And then the joke is later, when they, like, look at the rest of the book, it's a cookbook, and it's actually, they're going to eat them, and they're going to serve man, like, you know, how to serve men. So the joke is, that's the same thing. They did make a cookbook for Razork. They made him a cookbook, Razork. It was called To Serve Man. He was like, right, because I'm the jungler, I've got to serve all these guys. And in the end, what he does is just serve up a menu of, what do you want today? You want some roasted fucking humanoid? He's burned his flash mob four times. What, you want some fucking hilly? He's been roaming all over the place, a little bit of mengy meat, you know, like a bit like mutton. Like, fucking hell, this is outrageous, mate. It's mental, isn't it? Because that's one thing. I normally do think, nah, here's the thing, mate. Luckily, in my era, they already were on, like, the third remake of those shows. So that's how old I am. I'm still old enough that there was shows at, but not the classics, obviously.
That's a banger, fucking. That's a banger.
It's a good joke, though, isn't it? I know, it's a pretty good one. It's also, by the way, Also, as a random aside, if people ever want, like, if you like Black Mirror and stuff like that, spoiler, you're going to love the old fucking Twilight Zone. It's the same shit, just well done. And in fact, I'd even say this, by the way, the reason you know the old ones hold up, like the black and white ones, is because obviously, like, the special effects are terrible. It goes without saying, like, the masks and stuff. But it's just theatre of the mind. It's about the scenario they create. And if it's really creepy, it works. Like, some of them are really disturbing, even if you know it's a shit, like, mask, it's not an alien. Like, some of them work anyway. So anyway, the point I to get back to is this. Right, I actually do think, Dom, I'm out on Fnatic. They're not winning this split. I don't get, like, I'm also done with this idea that they were trying to sell before. It reminds me of the old Wonder on G2 storyline. You know the storyline when Wonder was on G2 was like, lol, it's hilarious that he's playing WoW all the time and not really playing League, but he still wins. Lol, this is hilarious. And I always used to tell people, warning, the moment they stop winning, that'll stop being a fun storyline. And in fact, it'll be what wrecks his career. That'll be the moment. And dude, was I fucking right about that. Until the very end. And last year, when he was playing the game, everyone's like, he's probably just playing WoW all the time. So in the same sense, Humanoid's whole narrative is, it doesn't matter if he fucks around in the regular season, in the playoffs he's money and he's going to deliver. The last split he didn't, and quite frankly, this split, like, I don't see why he would just wake up and be the best mid now, mate. Because that's the other thing. He also has an aspect, if we're going on his personality, that whole thing again seems fun of, like, he's a Chad, he doesn't even care if he ints. Dude, he actually does look like he doesn't care if he ints in some of these games. Like, mate, what the fuck was that, like, Baron TP he did in this last week? That was like cancer. Mate, imagine someone does that, and then I'm all supposed to sit in the VOD review afterwards and go, yeah, this guy's our most clutch genius player who just reads the game. Like, he doesn't even press the fucking summoner spell correctly. What are we talking about? He had one button to press. Do I press it now? Oh, I pressed the button. I've ruined it all. Like, what was that shit, mate? What was that, TP Dom? You're telling me you were cool with that? You must have been Malden. If I pull up your VOD review now, I bet you were Malden on that core stream, mate, when he did that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just the way the Fnatic looks. But as a whole, it's just like the thing. It's not even just, it's so hard to even get mad at those, like, individual issues because they compound on each other. So, like, you see the first, and then they just, like, keep on trying to fix the problem. So there'll be, like, the next one, and then you'll see, like, four mistakes in a row. And by the last one, it's just lost its effect. It's not like a really tense game where they're playing perfectly, and then they have, like, one huge in. They've ended, so I don't even know. I would have to pull up again which one you're referencing exactly, yeah. Because, who even fucking cares at this point? Like, they always just ruin the game like that.
No, you're right, though, because there's a difference, Dom. I've seen Rogue play a whole game fine and do one little mistake and lose. Fnatic just make, like, half a dozen mistakes every game, win or lose. Win or lose, mate. Like, fucking ridiculous. What do you think, Zabatine? Like, do you actually think this team could win LEC? Like, essentially, because I think this is one area as well where it's a big ask for a coach. Like, if this team has failed, like, he's not a miracle worker. Like, he's only got the players he's got now. No one else is coming in the team. Can it win LEC, Fnatic?
It's very hard to believe. Very, very hard to believe. Like, I'm not a definitive no person. So I would say, like, it's a very unlikely. I wouldn't bet on it. I wouldn't put a dollar on it.
I mean, he's a positive guy. He had to coach, like, Optic and Immortal, so he had to have this, like, you know, this belief. You know,
here's the thing: I'm really going to make him work for his money now, because as I mentioned earlier, obviously he personally coaches Vetio, and let's be real, outside of Vetio and Neon, there's not really that much you can talk about Misfits positively, but let's try, shall we? So here's the thing. First things first, I'll just start with my take on Misfits, right? I did tell you, if you notice on those past episodes, Dom, even though Misfits look better and better and better, a lot of it is they do just catch throws from the other team. Like, the other team throws them it, and they've just been able to actually successfully catch it, bring it down, and fucking there we go. We scored. We got our score. Because when you actually see them play otherwise, like, they're not ever going to be an elite team with this squad, mate. And one of the reasons why is this. Even when they win games, I watch some of these games, and I'm like, what is the Slatan guy doing? Like, how does he make so many mistakes?
Well, we don't need to talk about that guy anymore.
Dude, he wins games that they make these mistakes. I don't get it. Like, I don't want to hate on the guy, but if I was him for real, I would actually be like, dude, I'm getting carried. This is insane. Like, I don't know how I'm winning any of these fucking matches. I think it's mental.
Well, I mean, you don't have to talk about that guy anymore because we just we saw the replacement, so... Yep.
Zenzara doesn't replace him.
I mean, justifiably though, like, I think I'm not hating Zabatine. Like, last split he was all right. He obviously won the rookie of the split, which is bullshit, but he won it, right? He had some lease in games. This split, like, I think he was fundamentally one of the main problems in this squad. Like, he just didn't work in the team, I think.
I mean, look, the one thing I'll say is I don't think that Zenzara is much better. So, like, it's
not
like
greatest swap, sure.
You replaced, like, cow dung with, like, horse dung, and it's like, I mean, at the end of the day, both your junglers are gonna hit. Maybe it's Zenzara's meta. I can understand that. Like, Trundle's coming back in, Poppy's like a tank jungler. there's the we've seen now in LPL today. We saw Skarner come in as the answer to the Poppy. God. So
there we go.
Maybe okay. This is the dream okay. Zanzar meta. My problem with Misfits is I don't like that they keep on trying to be a team that they're not. They have a very defined style that has worked for them in almost every single one of their games. They have a weak side top laner. They have like a tank top or Gwen top. It's just like those two. And they play a hard fucking carry mid lane, like a hard scaling carry mid. And then they have like an AD that can also just join in like as another point of power, like a scaling hard carry AD. And then they just like decide to go away from that when they start winning games. I never understand. It's like, you don't need to be this fucking crazy good team. Like, you're trying to get into playoffs and get a world spot. Like, you're not trying to be the best team in LEC. Like, that is such an unreasonable thing. You want to do as best as you can. So for me, I think that they need to hone in on what they do, but it feels like they're not ready to accept that fate. They're like, no, we got to be better than that. Like, we can't win LEC if we, you know, are playing a tank top every game. It's too easy to draft. It's like, number one, I don't even know if that's true. Like, G2 playing a fucking tank top almost every game. Well, they were playing like a bunch of Ornn, and that's when they got into form and won LEC. So I don't even know if you can't win LEC if you get really good at that one style. But for me, it's like, why do you keep on trying to change it? Like, you don't need to play all these other champions. We don't need to see a fucking carry from Irrelevant. Like, that, it's just not necessary. It's not necessary. And it's not the way they're going to have the best performance. Especially when you consider how many games they lost in the beginning. Like, they started 0-4. They don't have a lot of these games to drop. Yeah. With dropping these last two, like, now they're 5-6. Like, dude, if you lose like three more games, there's a chance you don't even make playoffs. So I just want to see them reel it back in. So yeah, that's my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's I align with what Dom said. I feel like it's a harder problem that it was summer split last year and spring split this year. I feel like here it's too, with all the holes in his play and all the ends, Heret is a very good 1v1 player. He's an extremely gifted laner in terms of pressuring if the jungle doesn't come. But so he creates pressure. And this pressure was very well used in the spring split by VTU and Neon to actually scale. And they had great scaling champions. Think about the Sylas, the Akali, the Jinx, right? The Aphelios. And this was Misfits' play side. So if you weren't able to punish Heret enough and snowball out of here it ends, like overextends, you would be overscaled in team fights. The problem with Irrelevant is now they have a weak side, top side that doesn't really stop dying either. I think he has been improving drastically since week two. He's way better, but I don't think he's way better. Like, he's not good enough to actually be a carry. So nobody soaks pressure in early game anymore. So you have a jungle that actually doesn't play for the lanes, and you have a bot lane, a weak side bot lane, a weak side top lane, and you have a scaling mid laner. So that's a team that does nothing. Like, that's the definition of a team that's going to do nothing. And so I think that most teams have figured out that if you get vision around mid, you prevent VTO from moving. Whenever you have a winning side, whether it's bot or top, you keep diving this bot or top and you just win out of this. But there is no like prodigy in the top that's going to soak pressure and probably 1v2 at some point and win the game out of that. So I feel like it's a significant downgrade, actually. Not that Irrelevant cannot play in ADC. I think he had pretty good games. But Misfits is not a system where Irrelevant can fit in at all. And so it actually increased the burden on Neon and VTO to carry. And it gives Zlatan no real play, and Zlatan doesn't even play well no anymore. So, I mean, it's really hard to be enthusiastic about Misfits, man. Like, obviously, I'm rooting for them because I'm rooting for VTO because I'm working with them. But I feel like the whole energy from the team where they're going to, like, get this giga upset out of nowhere, maybe even for them it's getting old. I don't know, right? I don't have this level of insight, but it's like, why would it be excited about like coming back from a 6-7k deficit every single day or losing, because this is what they do every single time.
I definitely agree.
You can maybe make worlds because there's four slots. That's what I would say. It's like, you can still fucking do it.
There's an outside chance. Yeah, there's an outside chance. I don't think they're going to beat anyone in a BO5, like, but whatever. All I'll say is this.
Might not even need to, Thorin. That's the great part about the system we got.
Well, they're also never making top four, though, to be real. In this fucking BO1 part.
They do actually. See, this is the thing, because you got to remember that there is circuit points that determine your seeding. So there's a world where, like,
I forgot about that. Yeah, you're right.
They have, I believe, a 20-point lead on XL. So even if they, like, end up one spot behind XL, they could actually end up being top four over them. True. So there's an outside chance. But I would say it is low. Like, I wouldn't bet on this team making worlds. I'm just trying to throw it. It is, like, in the realm of possibilities that you could do that. So just wanted to throw that in.
The funny thing is, I actually think I've mentioned this a few times on watch parties and shows, but I have the same vibe in Europe as I do as when I watch 100 Thieves in NA, which is like, it's so easy, in my opinion, to get tricked by the turnaround of the wins, because you're like, wow, they're winning games now. It's like, yeah, they're winning because they've essentially cynically realized that you have to band-aid this team. It's not going to work. Look, what's the basic blueprint that works? And both teams are actually quite similar drafting style, you notice. And if they get it correct, like, these are the two teams that you can just tell by the draft if they have a chance of winning the game or not. There's no like, oh, how are they going to get around this? Maybe that's not going to work. Like, you can see if they drafted the right ones, like Dom says, in the right roles, they have a chance. If they don't, there's fucking no chance. So they're not that interesting. But one thing I thought we could segue from is, obviously there was another piece of news, which was one from, to be fair, one of the formerly anonymous leakers, so who knows how true it is, which was that apparently Misfits might just leave LEC entirely. That is the rumour. Maybe they are one of the teams that cashes out, leaves the space, and someone else buys in. Now, obviously, most people are going to get caught in what I think is the boring cul-de-sac conversation. Like, what if Carmine Corp was the last team? Like, everyone's had that discussion about a million fucking times, and it never goes beyond what if Carmine Corp joined. There's no interesting take anyone has. So let's skip that. I just wanted to do the take. Yeah, go on.
Just saying, that's probably not happening. By the time this releases... By the time this releases, the word on the street is that actually Heretics is the team. The team from LVP is the team that's actually going to be buying the slot.
It's a Spanish org. Yes. People might know it from CS, etc. Basically, the interesting part to me, I think it's more interesting, I want to get your guys' take on, is I think it's actually the implication about what it means about teams like Misfits. Basically, teams that traditionally, if you look at the history of LEC, have been like bottom half table teams and stuff. Because the vibe goes like this. A lot of people, you might remember the infamous Carlos comment when they were making LEC about how there's like a lot of orgs are like parasites and they're just going to sort of like take a slot up, but they're not going to do any work and they're not going to have marketing and they're not going to make merchandise and they're just going to sit back and they're going to share part of the rev and they're just going to sit on a spot, basically. Like, essentially, that's the discussion I get the implication we can have about this, which is, if someone like Misfits is going to leave, obviously Schalke already left last year, they got the 26 million euros, that's what a lot of people are now looking at, right? They're basically, if you're a fan and you don't know the business of League of Legends, if you're the smaller orgs, maybe not Misfits because they went for the super team, but you think of like Astralis, SK Gaming, these are the teams that, like, if you can really get, we're obviously imagining the price is the same, if you knew the buyout is 26 million euros, that's it, it's the same as Schalke's got bought out for. Teams like SK and Astralis could fuck around for a few more years, and because they keep their margins down, they could sell for that 26 euro and make a profit from their League of Legends experience. They could actually leave with millions of dollars profit. So essentially, do you think people are doing that? Is that just a cynical take? Do you actually think there are orgs in the league which are just essentially sort of like keeping their foot in the door, so they want to keep their LEC slot to sell one day, but they're not trying, for example, like the G2s of the world to potentially like win each time. They're not trying to like re-up. Like Fnatic must have spent big money on this offseason team, you know. This is a team built to win. So what are your guys' thoughts on this one? Like, is LEC got an issue in that sense? Our team's camping spots, do you think? Does it matter?
I'd say the only one that actually saw doing that, like kind of the black on the way, was actually Misfits, because they had the rookie that you want to invest on, right? Once you have someone like VTO and you already have Razorc and you know that you have players, you had very good players around the market that were free agent at the end of the season. Like you had Wunder that was available, you had Mikix that got available because of the blow up of the G2 sphere and stuff like this. So like, thinking about it, once you have your, I would say, rookie payroll, very high quality kind of road diamond, and you have this jungle that's loyal but it's part of like the higher bracket of the jungles, and you have your mid jungle setup, it's pretty easy to build a very competitive team with, I would say, not that much of a budget. And if you look at it, they have maintained pretty much the same thing. They could have replaced they haven't imported at all, even when Heret left, like they didn't try to get another import. So they've pretty much been what I would say, it's not like terrible because they had good results, but they've been in maintenance for the last 2 years, right? They haven't been investing in any big names since the SOAS, Gorilla, Hensama, and it's been 3-4 years ago. So it was 2019, right? So this for me, because we can speak about Astralis, but I think that even with a lower payroll, Astralis has tried to make move this offseason to actually better the team. They actually benched players, they hired ones, they actually got Chelsea back, and they look way better. If you think about SK has been making a lot of changes. I don't think they're just holding a spot. They're trying to advertise it, whether it works or not. They're only the only German team in LCS. I'm not a huge fan of SK, but I don't feel like they're just holding a spot. BDS, if they're just holding a spot, I don't understand anything. because it just got in and they're trying to do things. So the only team that actually didn't show any ambition of getting great players, upgrading the roster, building a long-term plan, or getting any type of visibility within the sphere was Misfits. So I'm not that surprised that like it's among the candidates, according to the rumors, that they're going to leave. We were saying the same about XL, but I think that XL this year, not only they've invested in good players, they have good results, and anything they do from like content to merch and stuff like this is pretty good. Like they are trying to do things that make sense. They probably need an international win, like a relevant win for people to gather to them, but they're still trying. So I wouldn't put like XL in the bag of teams that are like just holding the door. I don't know what your opinion, Dom, on that.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that there's like very clear teams that want to sell eventually, right? Like to me, SK, Astralis, Misfits, like BDS, I don't really know how to judge them. Of course, it's only been 1 year. Maybe things just didn't work out, but like where, like they didn't buy any players for that team. There was no like star players that they got. I mean, I guess Adam was like coming off some hype from Fnatic and he's like French player, French org. Maybe that like would be like a player that you want on
Swiss
your team old. Because he was... Oh, it's Swiss or true.
Yeah,
they have
an
LFL. Yes, yeah. True, actually. Wait, were they bought by a French guy or no?
Isn't he Belgian, the guy who owns it or something?
No, he's a Swiss guy.
Oh,
like BDS belongs to a Swiss guy, Latour. BDS Latour.
Okay. Oh, wait, why are they involved in all the French drama? I thought they were French org this whole time. Because all the...
I mean, because they're in the NFL and they speak
French. And Swiss, essentially, yeah. Swiss people in esports. Yeah. And like Belgians just go with the French by default. Yeah.
I stand corrected. So maybe that was like... But I guess the overall point is that he was a super popular player, right? So maybe you want to have somebody like that who is on the up in terms of popularity in their org. So I think that could be a draw. But then like their whole demeanor this entire time where they're like, oh, well, we got a 2-year plan. In the second year, we're going to be good. It's like, dude, you guys are fucking 1-10. Like, it's not like you guys are almost competitive. You guys don't look like Misfits from last year where it's like, oh, this video guy looks kind of good. Ooh, maybe they can do something in the next year. Like, you just have no faith in this lineup. So, I mean, I just feel like that whole tier, like, you know what Misfits has been doing this whole time. You could see it. Like, if you really wanted to contend, you wouldn't bring Mercer up and try to develop another player. Like, you have the players that are developed. Like, you already did that. You got Vedio when he was cheap, when he was coming from ERLs. Like, you don't have to do that again. Like, there's no reason. Like, import if you have to. Get somebody who's really fucking good on that team. So when I look at other players on this team, I just know that Misfits is trying to get the bag. Same thing with Schalke. Schalke did the same thing. Like we see SK essentially doing the same thing. Like they're not putting budget into this team. They like if somebody comes around and offers an insane amount of money for SK, you're telling me SK is going to keep that slot? Like I don't think that they're making it. Like look at their branding and everything. No one's buying SK merch. No one's doing anything based off their League of Legends team. So they're not in it as well. Astralis, like they made moves that are kind of good and they're like trying, but they didn't do it in a way that they had to spend a lot of money. You know they're not trying to win a title in LEC. So I mean, I just see that like among LCS and LEC, as soon as they franchise, you suddenly got all these bottom feeder orgs that are just okay with mediocrity. And the problem that I see is that there's no fire because of no relegations. There's no fire of these teams to like actually become like good. Like you don't have to panic if you're BDS right now. Look at what BDS has done. Look at their mentality right now. What did they just do? Bringing Limit into the main team, bringing Erdote into the academy team. It literally looks like they want their academy team to just succeed more in EU Masters, and they're just like, fuck the LEC team. Like, we're probably out of it anyway. We need to, like, win, like, 7 games in a row. We probably have to win the remaining games to even have a chance.
Yeah, they're probably right.
So, you wouldn't do that if there was relegations on the line.
Yes.
Like, you would actually be like, oh, shit, we gotta, like, actually get better. Because right now, imagine being them and then looking at, like, a team like LDLC. Imagine being BDS. I tweeted out after that game, I was like, I don't even think this BDS team... This BDS team... would maybe not even be a top 5 team in LFL. And Sinkrov replied to me and he's like, yeah, we'd struggle to even make playoffs. That's what he said. So,
but you know, I don't know. In NFL, there is up and downs, for instance. Like you have your first and second division of NFL, right? Okay. And so you have the Feb event that got hired by one of the teams that's in relegation to replace the mid laner because they wanted to. So they have fire, right? If you're not winning, you're irrelevant for a whole year. So you gotta get it. I just feel like it's probably a broader topic, but I feel like the LEC has probably been a very good, like the idea of franchising and partnership has probably been a very good idea at the moment it's been decided. And it's up in the air. I'm not even sure of that. But at the moment, at the current moment, I feel like it has very little relevance because No, you have a whole circuit of players. Players are protected now, right? They can play in LFL and make a decent living. You can even play in second division French league and make a decent living. I'm pretty sure in Prime League in Northern League, probably MVP, it's probably not as expensive as the LFL because there's less visibility and stuff. But there is still, like, you can make a job as a European player pretty much all across the board, right? And investors, when they invest, like, they should be rewarded by sports branding, fandom, to be into this league. The problem is, no, they're stuck with this. If it's 25 million per slot, right, it's a 250 million asset that's standing there. It's a security, right? It's just divided in 10 parts, and they don't know what to do with it. Because the natural flow should be that the winner of the EU Master going to in up and down. That should be the natural flow of any common sense, right? Should be, okay, so Vitality B wins the EU Master. Okay, they can do the up and down. If they win, they have to rebrand. And now, whoever influencer, whether it's Mr. Beast, Kameto, or some guy from, I don't know, like Germany that I never heard about, wants to actually sponsor this team and bring all his fan base that never heard of League of Legends into the world of esports and bring all the new fans to League of Legends, that would benefit the LEC and League of Legends industry as a whole a lot, right? That's, for me, what NA has failed to do, right? By cutting, like, broadcast abroad and cutting sources of viewers. This is the same thing as, like, no German is like, oh, I'm gonna watch SK because I'm German.
Yeah,
take the biggest influencer, right, of Germany and tell him, like, oh, there is Vitality B coming in out of the LFL to the LEC because they want EU Masters and they want the up and down. Do you want it to be your team? And he's like, oh, yeah, let's try this. And then suddenly you have, like, I don't know, 500k or 300k new people that are actually interested in League of Legends. But that doesn't happen because, oh, we have 250 million that we need to reimburse if we want to open the league again. And nobody wants to spend 250 million to that for that. So I feel like it's kind of a dead end. And this is kind of, because I don't know, whoever buys the slot, if it's not like a huge audience team, do you think it's going to, like, legitimately, like, Thorin, do you think it's going to fix the viewer drop? Like, there is, like, minus 120.
I don't think it'll affect it almost at all, personally. Like,
Heretics versus Misfits, how does that change?
Yeah, exactly. It's irrelevant to me. The only thing is, I would say this. I think basically you're being too kind when you're, like, saying, like, but they have made changes. Like, the problem here is, like, again, it's not like I'm saying they've done nothing and they've spent, like, the literal minimum amount of euros you can spend to hire the cheapest players for four splits in a row. And they're literally even saying, like, in interviews, like, we don't even care. We're just fucking shit. They're not going to be that ridiculous. But what I mean is this. If you get a spot in the LEC, right, you either think it's great business or you want to be a competitive team, right? We know it's not amazing business. It's just you lose slightly less than the open circuit. Everyone's still losing money. So now you're in a scenario instead where there's actually a world, like I said, where you might not lose money. Like, spoiler, Schalke will have made maybe like 10 million euros from their time in fucking LEC. If you look how much they got at the end and how little they will have paid with those salaries. They weren't paying big money, by the way. And they were getting even the good players, like either when they were on the down of their career or they were just coming up as a rookie. They weren't signing big names. They signed people at the end, like all these cons doing Astralis and SK. You just signed the guy who's half decent before because he's got nowhere else to go. And all you need to know is this. Here's how, in my opinion, you can tell that these teams are. It's more that they go in the middle, Zabatine. It's that they go, right, is this team like all right at the moment, maybe sign like a slightly more expensive player and we'll go for like the playoff run. Ah, the playoff run's not there, fuck it, just put in the RL player, be cynical. I think they do that. I think they try and like stay in the really like walk the fine line of spend as little as possible to like stay in a team and maybe just have a, because the reason why is this, it's given away with what you said, it's what they do in the off seasons that gives them away, Zabatine. They don't get a team like Misfits had and go, wow, look at what we've done here, tell you what, sign a fucking sick support player, let's us get Mickey X, the team's complete. Now let's go and fucking win the LEC. They don't. They go, gamble on another support from ARL. Did it work? Vethio, carry 1v9. You didn't win. Ah, whatever. Get a different player in. Then in the Astralis team, do they sign like Jizuke and have like an identity and marketing and a start? Do they fuck? They go, try any mid laner. What? Try Nuke Duck when he's washed. Try White Knight. Fuck it. Try this Mayor guy. The Jor guy. Bayor guy. Any other Gayor guys. Like anyone with fucking. They don't care, mate. They're not trying to sign the top players. They're just putting anyone in these fucking roles. So I think cynically, when they think they have a little chance at a run, they spend a little bit of money. I think every now and then they get one name. But like these teams look to me like they are phoning it in, mate. And the reason why it sucks is because when I go and look at the top of the RLs, like you're saying, they line up apps are way better than fucking Astralis and SK Gaming. Like, what is this shit? Like, I go on and look at the best ERL teams. They'll have like two or three players that are better than an SK player or an Astralis player. Like, it's ridiculous. So to me, it's not as simple. They're not making it obvious, because if they made it too blatant, like Riot eventually would have to kick them out. They can't go 0-18 four splits in a row. But I do think these teams are mad cynical. Like, I'll probably make a video on it separately, so I'll go more in detail there. But I think this sucks for the LEC, because like I say, it means there are actually players who are too good to be in LEC, but they can't play as a result. Like, what's the point in being these players like Crownshot? Like, but I either sit on a bench, or I go to an ERL, or I can't, or I have to be good enough to be top four. Like, what's the incentive structure for me, you know?
And the thing that you talk after, it's just, I feel like the system is wrong, because you see the very same thing in LCS. Like, the thing is,
I agree. I'm fine. I think it's a franchise problem.
That's a very important thing, right? Because you could say, oh, it's a European thing, right? But it's not. It's the system that's to blame. Like, if you create a system that's by nature generating revenue only for the top four teams, but generating a huge market value, right? A market.
By the way, what we're talking about now basically is the main problem with the esports industry as a whole. It's that right now you lose money if you try and get the top players. So it's only worth getting the top players if you literally A, think you can win, and B, you can survive losing the money. Otherwise, what you do is you just try and stay as long as you can surviving and hope you get to the point where all the money comes, which isn't yet, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. But you see that the system is wrong, because the same problems happen in LCS.
Yeah, I agree.
It's even probably more blatant in LCS. I don't know what you think, Dom.
Yeah, it's definitely more blatant. I mean, like, Immortals over the years. Like, I hate to bring you into this, but Immortals over
you
the
think
years.
Dude, I got fired in week two summer speed.
Yeah,
you think I'm a fan?
Yeah,
gives
a fuck.
Did you see any poster in the back?
Yeah, no, exactly. So, I mean, Immortals, Dignitas, sure. Golden Guardians is the most blatant example of this. You
I think
see
that obvious one, yes, exactly.
Golden Guardians lucked into actually having a competitive roster. Like, holy shit, this guy from fucking Turkey is actually cracked. And this guy from OCE that we brought in suddenly became not an import, and he's cracked too? What the fuck? We're going to just, like, win Worlds or some shit. And then what do they do immediately? They have one good split. They get, like, they take a series off TSM. And they lose to them the second time they play in the double elimination. They send them all to Immortals. Take the whole fucking team. We're going to start over again. What did they replace them with? Yep, to 100 Thieves. And then, to 100 Thieves. I don't know if I
said Immortals. Just fine. Yeah, keep going.
But the best part about that is, who do they take? They take Iconic and Niles. They start rebuilding Maryville University. They don't even go to, like, Academy, where it's like, this is the equivalent of ERL. It's like going to ERL second division, or going to, like, I mean, I don't even know what it would be the equivalent to. Maybe it is ERL second division of, like, not even ERL second division of, like, LFL, the second division of, like,
yeah,
what, NLC
Open Tour. Open Tour, yeah. It's like, it's the real amateur, right? It's like, you can just go with your team. Like, you go in LAN, pretty much, right?
Yeah,
and exactly. The first one of these thing can go into second division.
Exactly. So it's something like that, because, I mean, the hierarchy should be, like, you have academy teams, and then you have, like, amateur teams, and then under that should be the collegiate teams. But they went to collegiate teams and put them in the roster, and they sold it as, we are developing our fucking talent. What did they do? They kicked the players, like, instantly. As soon as they could find better replacements, they just kicked them. So it wasn't like they even built up Niles and built up Iconic and just, like, fucking, you know, suddenly they had a long-term goal, or they tried them for multiple splits. They kicked Niles after one split. Like, he ran it down for one split, which is expected, and they just kicked him immediately. Like, it wasn't even like they even tried. So, man, I'm so tired of NA. It's like the same thing. I mean, even FlyQuest, I think FlyQuest got lucky with the players that they got. Like, the fact that Takui is actually a beast, I don't think that they were real. I think that they prayed that he was a beast. I don't think that they scouted him. They're like, this is, like, the guy, and then we're going to, like, get these stars around him. When you look at the creation of the team, if you wanted to be competitive right now, potentially, like, fight for a world spot, you wouldn't be getting somebody like Kumo as your top laner. Like, you wouldn't be, that would not be the idea for what a team is, because you need other pieces around him. You'd have Takui is like your import, where it's like, oh, he has the potential to be the beast. He could be the Vedio or something. And then you'd get an insane top laner. You'd be like, okay, so, like, let's import a fucking top. Top is always weak in our region. Import a top. Get the fucking team working like this. I don't know, man. When I see all these types of moves from teams, it literally feels like there's five teams in LCS that want to actually contend. One of them is, ironically, I think TSM, even though they end up sucking and they use all their money, I actually do believe that they are trying to spend money to get a team that's good. Like,
hey,
they
you
do
can
want
see
to
by other signing. Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, Maple, like, I mean, I can, I believe that
they spend too much money not to say, like, I mean, the price they pay for these players coming from Asia, right? It's ginormous. So they're doing it wrong, obviously wrong, but they're doing it at least, right? You need to give them props for that.
At least try and disappoint. Yeah,
yeah. I give them the pass there. I feel like CLG lucked their way into a good roster right now, but they're doing the same thing. Like, they're doing the same thing.
This was supposed to be the down year for CLG, you can tell.
Yeah, yeah. FlyQuest, CLG, Golden Guardians, Immortals, Team Dignitas. I mean, Golden Guardians selling their team to 100 Thieves. I mean, it's just like, you just know that these teams are not there to actually win. Like, because they don't care. Like, they don't even think if they win that it'll be a good return on investment. They're not going to be able to capitalize enough on the win to pay for what the whole roster is going to be. So you know that these teams are just waiting for somebody to come and give them a bag. I don't know. It's just really frustrating to watch, because the problem is it makes a lot of the games bad to watch. Like, so there's days of LEC, like, for example, in that week 4 where Thor and I talked about it, it was just a horrible day of games. Both of the days were just like, man, there's like almost nothing to watch here. There ended up being upsets, so that saved it. But just in terms of the matchups, there's nothing that you're hyped about. This is why I care about it.
Here's the problems, Abertain. I actually totally understand for the owners. Like, put it this way, if I was an owner and I owned like SK Gaming, far from the biggest org in Europe, I probably would do this strategy. This is actually the GM strategy I would do. It's why I actually praised like Astralis for gambling on the Yonghoon guy. I think that's a great example of a very cheap move that could have an enormous upside. It's a great gamble. But the difference is this. As a viewer, I hated those Abertain. Like Dom's saying, I want it to be 10 teams that are all trying to win. And so I actually have like a real battle, and I know everyone's working the hardest. And I know, for example, they're trying to put the best players in the league as well. Like, if they pick this mid laner instead of Jizuke and Jensen and Niski, I want to believe that they actually think he's going to be better, that they think he is the next Vethiol, and they think he's going to be the MVP. I don't want it to be like, well, why did you get him then? Oh, it's just cheap. Just no one else wanted him, so he's just available. That's fucking whack. No viewer wants that. Right, let's flip anyway. The last team to talk about, because fuck talking about SK and BDS. We did side ways to do it. It's obviously XL, but I saved them till the end, right? Here's the thing with XL. Normally, I'll give you the like lay of the land here, Sabatine. Normally, we sort of put them a little bit in the category of the rogues of the world, where it's like the problem they have is they can look really clean. They're winning now, but A, no one knows if they're going to do anything in playoffs. And I think with their team as well, they particularly have the problem that no one really thinks in the traditional carry roles that they have a superstar like Nuke Duck. I mean, maybe you'll make the Patrick case. You've said you think he's mega good, but that's the other thing. People think maybe you can't win LEC if you don't have the superstars to get you through the big series, etc. So do you actually believe in XL? Do you believe XL can be a champion Zabber team? Can they be the best LEC team? I mean, it's their time, if anything, right?
I think I'm kind of sad because I feel like if I was XL, I would have tried to invest probably into a Nuke Duck is playing pretty good, I think, this split, but like for a mid laner superstar like a Tukuyu. Like
wasn't this supposed to be one of the teams trying to get Vettio in the offseason, like this mid season pack? Wasn't that one of the rumors?
Yeah, I heard this rumor. I don't know if it's true or not. I mean, VTO in XL would have made them like a world contender.
Right? Yeah.
Like I would have seen this team as a world contender. I'm not saying Nuke Duck is bad, but I feel like there is a point, as I said previously, right, during this podcast, is 2v2 mid jungle is extremely important in any league, but it's even more important in Europe, right? It's a region where like mid jungle, pretty much you have the best mid jungle, you win the league. Like Caps Yanko has actually
for
like the last 3 years.
Yeah, I'd argue in spring it happened as well. Yeah, they probably won the best tournament.
I just feel like they're probably gonna. I don't want to wish that for them because they have very, very good players and pretty good rookies. I feel like scouting was pretty interesting from them. I mean, scouting to some extent because they still have Mikix. I am afraid they're going to fall short when the game's going to change. Not sure of it, but with the change, they're going to be a massive change, right? The next patch of League of Legends kills the sustain in lane, meaning that any bad trade you're taking, you're not recovering from it. It's not like, it's like Season 2, where you take a bad trade, someone pokes you, it pokes you out of lane. You're losing two waves, and you're going to be one level down. This is going to clearly make a difference between great laners and laners. Like, you cannot just trade your HP for like pushing a wave and go dive. You're gonna have to win your priority by actually like laning someone out. And I feel in that sense, someone like Larson is gonna shine a lot because he's fundamentally a very good laner and he plays for that. But I don't know if like the mid jungle of XL is gonna resist to this increase in skill in mid lane. Yeah. Because they're gonna be a huge gap up in terms of skill requirement in mid lane to be able to be a good 2v2 mid jungle from that point. I don't know what you think, Dom, because I mean you're pretty knowledgeable about the game, but I want to know what you think about it.
Well, one thing that is interesting is, so I agree with the overall sentiment that laning is going to be harder. One thing they seem to have pulled from the patch, because I'm looking at right now, is did they actually keep the TP nerf? Because I thought that was actually a huge part of it, and it seems like they took away the TP nerf.
They said they were going to get rid of that, I think, didn't they? I think it's off Reddit rumors, but didn't they say they scrapped that idea or something?
Yeah, maybe the TP nerf didn't come in, so I thought that was going to make it even worse. I would have to see it in practice, because obviously like I mean, it definitely looks big. But I wonder how much people will still just be taking TP in the mid lane, just push out a wave. And like, that's always been your get out of jail free card. So I was actually more interested to see how it worked without the TP nerfs, because the TP nerfs were supposed to be up to 7 minutes. And it's like 7 minutes for a fucking TP. Like, goddamn, like you got that shit like once for lane phase, maybe twice for lane phase. And then besides for that, you're just like going to be actually holding it to make plays post 14, because then obviously 14 becomes the unsealed TP, goes down to 4 minutes again. So I mean, we'll have to see how bad it is. I think what I fear is going to happen is that we might end up just in a control mage meta where the people that don't have the most confidence in their lane just try to cheat lane by playing something like super, super safe. So we just see even more Azir, even more Corki, that type of stuff. And, you know, we see just people, you know, Victor and stuff like this, and people will just be playing to not die, because it's pretty easy to play a lane super defensively. Like, it's pretty easy to just, like, only trade when the person walks into your range and not actually try to exploit it. So I wonder what direction we'll get in Europe, because it doesn't seem like these types of changes are normally capitalized as hard in Europe as I see in like other regions. So obviously I watch a ton of LPL. When they did the durability changes, just look at how it affected the game in Europe compared to China. In LPL, motherfuckers don't care. It's like no durability patch happened. Everyone's diving all over the place still. Like, it's the turret changes, the durability changes didn't seem to change the game at all. And then when I see these changes hit Europe, like the durability changes made the games noticeably a lot slower. Like, you look at all of the European games right now, and they just don't feel the same. Outside of Mad Lions, no one plays aggressively. So I'm still not completely convinced that the game will be massively impacted. But I think it'd be nice to see for some of the players, because, you know, I miss the days of laners actually solo killing each other mid. Like, it feels like you never see anyone get solo killed anymore.
Now. Yeah,
I mean, maybe every now and then you'll see a bad play, but still.
Exile in Unicorns of Love, summer 2016, solo killed his opponent, I think, 26 times. There was 26 solo kills from the same player. Now, if you have one solo kill, you feel like, oh, it's the event of the day, right? It's the best play of the day. It gets like MVP of the day. Player of the day or whatsoever for that. So yeah, it's crazy. But it's just like sustain is so predominant in League at the moment. You can stay with like second win. You have champions that you can Renekton, for example, the matchup Renekton versus Victor. I remember I was asking Vito about it. He was like, yeah, if you play Renekton versus Victor, Victor needs to just hit the wave, because if he hits Renekton, he actually loses the lane.
Yep.
Because you regen so much that you actually don't, you can't do anything. And that's stupid. That's a nonsense. Like, it's the complete opposite of like what the game should be. So I hope it's gonna change to the good direction. But I agree with you. I think in Europe, Azir is gonna be like first P blue side every single game, and ban in red side.
By the way, to bring it back to the actual XL topic.
Sorry.
The other thing I think about this squad is, though, of all the times to have this nightmare dilemma, where, as you're pointing out, the real question if you were XL after last split was, do you have the balls to potentially upgrade on Nukeduck, who basically, by the way, is one of the players that helped make the team what it is now, and even potentially why people want to join the team. So, like, the problem is they didn't do that, right? I actually think now's the nightmare time as well, mate, because if you look at Nukeduck's level of play over the year, and right now even, he's, like, right on the line of, like, good mid laner who's not, like, the best and the superstar, but he's good enough to be in this team. Like, for example, the Talia looks like it fits in perfectly fucking fine, mate. Still got a great champion.
Sandra, obviously.
Still plays great with all the meta champions, with Markoon, but I think he's right on the line, though. Like, I actually think if he won LEC, he instantly goes to probably the worst on that list I have of like the worst player to win LEC for mid lane. But the problem is, like, he probably isn't going to win LEC, is he? I think he's just slightly too low. He's just slightly too low on the performance level for me.
I think the interesting thing for me is, like, so Mad and Rogue look pretty good right now, and then you have like Fnatic and G2, which both don't look that great, and then you have XL that's actually looking better. So do we see XL actually go to Worlds instead? Because I don't think that they're going to win the split. Like, I don't even think that that's possible for them. I think they could go to Worlds over a team like Fnatic with how bad Fnatic's been playing.
Even
Fnatic
just from the regular split they do, dude. Like, I mean, as you say, if you only need to get like a top three, top four spot, they're probably going to get it, right? If you look how the split's gone, I think XL gets one now. They're pretty consistent.
Well, it's hard because once again, you go back to the championship points, right? So Fnatic Fnatic has a ton of championship points. I think they have 50 because of what they ended up doing.
It'll be the same with G2 as well. Yeah, same with G2. True.
So they're probably going to have to fight for their slot. That's the issue.
And, some sense, because I will say I tell you what, Dom, because all these top teams now are the winning experience ones. I actually want teams to actually do something if they go to Worlds, though. Like, you know, the famous example was the first year Rogue went. If people remember, they did the same thing, Dom. They were number one seed and they were number one ring and they won the first match. Oh, maybe even lost the first match to Fnatic, I think. So they lost to Fnatic, but they just qualified for Worlds anyway. That was whack, because even though we didn't know at the time they were going to fail, which they did at Worlds, it was like, so you qualified and you haven't done anything yet in playoffs. Like, you can actually just lose every game. It's going to be the same vibe if XL goes now. Yeah, same problem, right?
Yeah, I think that's a problem. But at the same time, I think, like, how weird is it that a team, because, you know, Mad Lions has 0 points, right? They have 0 points from spring because they didn't make playoffs. How weird is it if Mad Lions, like, qualifies as second place, right? Like, let's say they get second, right? Rogue is first, Mad Lions is second, and G2 comes in as sixth seed. Like, or they actually play sixth in summer. How crazy is it that G2 would be a seed higher than Mad Lions?
That's wild. Okay, fucking hell. Okay.
Yeah, so G2, they already have 90. Second place is 90. And then if they make, like, and the only way that points apply is if you make playoffs. So if G2 gets sixth seed, they're already 110, which is almost guaranteed Worlds. Like, 110 is almost guaranteed that you're going to go to Worlds just based on how many points you have and what seed you're going to come in at. So there's a lot of, like, interesting things that could happen. I feel like XL... they should be a top four team in Europe based on how they play the split. I just have a feeling that somehow Fnatic will just get it together just enough to end up overtaking them. And once
that's
again,
how, that's like, how it works every year. Every year, you always have hope to see some new faces, right, in the international tournaments. And somehow, I don't know, like, you remember this TSM making the run back and actually qualifying for us to do a miserable 0-6?
Yeah, 2020. Right?
Yeah, it was crazy because they haven't been that great the whole year. And then just clicked for like 4 weeks, and suddenly they just like got skyrocketed to Worlds. They won the LCS, and I feel like it's always like this. Like, I don't know, Hilly Singh and Humanoid are gonna get like a super buff of motivation, just push themselves, be super nice to their teammate, try to shoot code a little bit more, you know, and they're gonna win like just clutch games to be in playoffs. Then in playoffs they're gonna. To me, the bet I've made in the French podcast that I'm doing is either G2 or Fnatic is not making it. I don't know which one. But this year, my bet is not both at the same time. So Mad Lions, Rogue, XL, and either Vitality, G2, or Fnatic. But I think it's going to be like G2, and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it just depends on if Fnatic and G2 make playoffs. Because like we said, if Fnatic and G2 both make playoffs, they have so many championship points that they might not need to actually be a top four team. That's the thing that's actually fucked up about it, is that you don't... Like, I mean, Fnatic is in the same boat. They have 50. XL has 10, right? So they have 40-point gap, which essentially means that if they're one spot lower than XL, they're automatically higher. And if you're higher than XL, you got to believe that the teams that are at the top, because you win so many championship points for your ranking in summer regular season, the teams at the top will probably, like, the 1-2, it's very hard for them to not fall into, like, the 5th, 6th. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's really scary for... Madden XL, if Fnatic ends up making a run in any way, because there's so many points you get awarded for, like, fourth place. Like, you could be fourth place, be three games down on the team that's above you, but that fourth place is still giving you 50 championship points. Combine that with your 50 from spring, Fnatic suddenly has 100 championship points. Oh, that's like second or third seed. So, I don't know. We'll have to see.
Who knows how this LEC split will end? But I'll tell you how this episode will end now.